Emo.
Yeah. Good guess. Hey, Cameron.
Hello.
Morning, or evening, I mean. Sorry. Yeah. Whatever it feels like to you.
Let's get some coffee.
Yeah, okay. Cameron, I'm just going to check that nobody's down in the room from yesterday, okay? Be back in a couple minutes.
Yeah, I'm early, so it's no rush.
Okay.
It's not conducive to astronomy.
What's that?
The main door is not so conducive towards astronomy because you can't hold a coffee at the same time.
That's true. Ignore. Hi, Larry.
You were up a little early.
What's that?
You were up early today when you emailed me.
Yeah, I was actually, yeah. There's no rest for the wicked, isn't there?
Well, those that can't sleep.
Hey?
Well, those that can't sleep.
That's you, yeah. Now I've got all 39 prints from 8141, imaged in V, cataloged in V, I mean, and cross-matched with I and plotted as sort of leakage.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
It's fun. It's like 4,700 sources.
Do you see any outliers?
Oh, yeah. Oh, sorry. Outliers. Yes. There was an interesting one yesterday that Andrew found that turned out to be a pulsar.
Ah.
Like a known one.
Yep. Good.
But, you know, it's a proof of concept. At first he thought it overlapped the position of a K dwarf and he was like pretty excited, and then later on realized he had the coordinates wrong and it was actually a pulsar.
Sorry, my computer keeps logging me out for some reason.
Yeah.
Nothing's we managed to find a pulsar.
What's that?
I managed to find a new pulsar in that way.
Yeah.
That's to my
chagrin.
Yes. It's called cool. no end of angst.
Mm.
I think I used Craig's remove useless access script. But I think there's still the useless access in the array of the stored data.
Oh yeah, you can't just adjust the header. You
no,
to change the
I don't. Yeah, let me actually see what's in Craig's script.
Yeah, you've got to use numpy.squeeze.
Yeah.
And mess with the header.
Yeah, let's squeeze out the useless access. Let's have a look. Oh no, it does have the, it should do the squeeze, it does do the squeeze. Why didn't it?
Why no squeeze? Mm-hmm. Alright, guess we'll get started in a minute. Sizes the leakage.
Oh, okay.
The great leakage, basically.
I thought that was supernova remnants or something.
No.
Is that done?
It's just at the distance where my glasses don't help. My eyesight. Take the average between the two.
I'm going to put it on the screen in a minute, and even your glasses will want to.
Is that for one of the mosaics? Like a full mosaic?
It's 1,400 beams stacked on top of each other.
Give or take.
Yeah, give or take. Yeah. Maybe a fairly consistent picture.
You can't have so many beams to actually.
Yeah, I have to. I've got some work today to try and filter out the signal because there's a lot of really wild values in there, actually, as well as.
The other thing that would be interesting is to do it on a per beam basis. See how beam-to-beam variation looks. Because there's an assumption that it would be similar in all the beams, but it won't necessarily be the case.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, well, the footprint ordering. Oh, how about that? That's the wrong desktop. How do I... There we go. That's out here. It's a good thing that wasn't anything confidential on that.
Well, that's impressive. Holy shit.
This is being recorded, Larry.
can we end the beeps?
Can we end this conversation?
I'm not sure who's going to care.
So this is, so what I've done here is there's, from the rack, one of the test racks observations, there was 39 footprints, I think. Yeah, 39 footprints, each of which has 36 beams. So whatever that product is, somewhere in the area of 1,400 beams.
Sorry, I'm wanting to sneeze while you're filling a cup of coffee.
Oh, I thought you were thinking about numbers.
Yes, it's something like that.
Yeah, so what I've done is take the MFS Stokes V image for each beam, primary beam corrected, done a source finding round in each of those MFS V images, cross-matched that with a master Stokes I catalog from the big mosaic, and then per beam I've plotted basically the degree of leakage I into V as the size. So the size of the circle is the degree of leakage.
So per beam or for all beams?
This is all beams relative to their field center.
Okay.
Yeah.
What's the scale?
So it's, the scale is huge at the minute because there are some junk sources and lots of junk sources in there. So the scale is from like minus 800% to 800% or something like that. So I have to filter out those sources today for sure.
So A times brighter in Stokes V than in Stokes I?
Yeah, those are junk, obviously. So those are a small proportion. I think it's maybe 10% of them or something have that kind of. They must be from the edge where, you know, the primary beam correction has, you know, jacked up the noise in Stokes V to some ridiculous level.
So it's probably the signal to noise of some of the fitses.
Yeah. So I've got the catalog. I should be able to filter it somehow. I just have to do it. But you can actually see it. There is a clear pattern if you look beyond the. And actually, there's too many sources here now, I think, to actually see it clearly. So what I'm working on today is trying to clarify the picture.
Yeah, I think you just have a single one who's cut off.
Yeah, I think that's right.
That's cool.
But is it radius or area which is proportional to V?
Radius. No, it's area. Sorry, it's area which is proportional because of the way that scatter works. The size is. Wait, hold on. Yes, the area of the circle is proportional to the leakage. Anyway, so I guess the main thing is now I've got this giant catalog so I can mess around with and try and, you know, get the leakage.
Yeah, that's nice.
The average leakage surface plotted up. And then what I'd like to do at that point then is cross-match each of these individual objects with their counterparts in the Stokes V mosaic and basically compare the leakage value per beam to its value in the final mosaic. And then compare that to a mosaic that had interleaving or not and with different pitch values so we can then, you know, translate the, you know, leakage per beam into what it becomes once you've mosaicked in various ways.
In fact, you should almost be able to get that from this. Because how far you go out, there's a bit more than that, but because the beams will be slightly different shape potentially with the different pitch, but in terms of how far out you go, that tells you roughly where the overlap is between one pitch and a different pitch.
Right. And so that dashed circle in the middle is half degree radius. So that's, you know, sort of indicative of the separation between beams for a typical pitch of about a degree. So it's within the dashed circle that you really have to worry about the leakage values in particular.
Yeah.
Okay, anyway, that's what I've been working on.
Interesting that there's surprisingly few sources in there, which is probably good.
In the middle?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because it means they're undetectable in V, presumably.
Mm. Yeah.
Do you have the equivalent for Q and U?
No. No, but that's kind of what Craig's working on, though, is because he's looking at fitting these surfaces, basically.
Is he doing it on racks, or is he doing it on
No, I think it's, no, it must be from the France.
Oh, that's right. Yes. Because it would be interesting to do on this as well, but that's obviously a lot more work.
Yeah.
Well, twice as much work as we've already done.
Three times.
Well, you had to do a fry, and so you, this.
Oh. Right. Yeah, well, it's fair enough. I do have the QNU images as well.
Oh, they exist.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. So I could actually do it. It's just a source finding. And that runs through it and whatever, runs through it sometime.
What are you using for a source finding?
Just a Bing and GN.
Right.
Defaults, basically. Although I did have to remember to put in the negative flag so it picks up negative values. I thought it was the default,
yes.
It's not.
So, yeah. Yeah, I had trouble with that when I was doing the NWA equivalent of this.
Mm.
In fact, I couldn't even, it just took forever to run. I ended up just writing my, because it was faster. Because
really?
There's so few sources, all I had to do is just roughly find it where they were.
Yeah.
It's not like I had to rummage through millions of source detections.
George, do we have the MSMFS output for the same fields, beams, or can we get it?
The MSMFS, what we have are whatever Stokes I images ML produced. That would have been some time ago now. That was in CASA, I presume.
Oh, sorry, I missed the question.
This was for, Larry's asking if we have MSMFS images of the field. And you're talking about Stokes I, I presume, Larry, right?
Stokes I and the Taylor term 1 image as well, because I'm curious about the spectral index.
Oh.
I can't even remember if I did take it that far.
I mean, I think there are problems with the spectral indices, so it would be interesting to know what the wideband algorithm was putting out.
Mm.
To be honest, that was so long ago. That was then. This is now. Because it's all done as a bit of a hack back then.
Oh, but they're gone now, aren't they, these images?
I don't even know what Julie's doing at the moment. Does she have Taylor term imaging?
I don't think so. Well,
because ideally, you'd at least have to have a term to deal with the spectral index, and ideally a second term to deal with the beam.
You don't, well, we don't still have Taylor term 1 in your directory.
Right.
Whether you produced them or not at the time, I don't know, but
That I can check, because it would just be my script.
Oh, yeah.
It's just simple CASA script.
Do you remember the, it must be 8583, I think. I'm just having a quick check, Larry. There's a Taylor 1 image from the RACS test that Julie was making cubes for.
Okay.
So we do have a Taylor 1 for, not this data set, Larry, but for another RACS test, we have a Taylor term 1 image.
So I had 2 terms when I was doing the processing.
I think you're muted, Larry.
And the cubes are in process or available yet now, or?
Those are the ones that are on the Possum share.
Yeah, but no. Where the Taylor term 1 is available, for the RACS field, do we have the cubes available on the Possum share?
Yes.
Okay. And the ones with the Taylor terms 0 and 1 presumably are also on Possum share or not?
Let me just have a check. I think so.
Because I could take a look at one of those fields tomorrow to compare the spectral index that you would get from fitting the cube versus what you get from the wide band. Just need to know the data are there.
Yes. So I can upload, it's not in there yet, but I can upload now the Taylor 1 image corresponding to the cubes, which are in the folder called Rax Test EW5.
Okay.
So the cubes are currently there. The Stokes I, effectively Taylor 0, is there as well. And I'll upload the Taylor 1 map later on.
Excellent. So are these cubes the same size as the ones that we've been working with?
Probably. The Beam ones are 18 gigabytes each.
Right.
And the Linmos ones are 150 gigabytes each.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Why are those or single plane?
No, these are the cubes, I'm saying.
Okay, let's start over. The Rax test field.
Yeah.
The cubes are what size?
This particular Rax test field that I'm pointing you to now, which is a 36-beam mosaic, the mosaic cubes are 150 gigabytes.
Oh, okay. We don't have the individual beams?
We do, yeah. Those are 18, 19 gigabytes. 18 gigabytes each, the per beam cubes.
Okay, and they're on there also in addition to the mosaic? I mean,
that's
I can
right.
go...
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so if you look in Rax Test BW5, you'll see there's a folder for the Linmos, which is the mosaic cubes, and per beam, which is the per beam cubes.
Okay, yeah, I'm slowly logging in here, so...
Yeah, no problem. Yeah. You'll see it. It should be pretty clear. And then the at the top level of that directory, there'll be the Stokes I images as well.
Okay. Yeah, I'm getting there. Projects, Possum Share. Okay. I don't see under Possum Share, I do not see Rax Cubes.
Yeah, you have to go to the next page of results because we have enough subfolders now. So there's a little.
Okay, yeah. Great. Yep. So I want Rax Test BW5.
That's the one, yeah.
Yep. And BW5, I see per beam, so that's perfect. And I see the I and the RMS, and you're going to upload the TT1.
Yep.
And I see the individual beams. Okay. So it doesn't matter that the I map is the mosaic, because that's going to be small. That's small anyway. It's just single plane, so that's fine.
Yeah, that'll be sort of order this less than a gigabyte. Yeah.
Good. Well, okay, I'll take a look at this tomorrow then. Good.
Great. Okay, maybe we should go around the room. Matthew, do you want to give a quick update on what you're up to? Good morning, by the way.
Good morning. I just found this room. It was very tricky.
Yeah.
I don't remember what I was doing yesterday. I ran a GN on the handful of beams I managed to actually get. Haven't really dug into that at all yet. I pulled out some very naive Faraday spectra. Many of them look terrible, but most of them look pretty good. Today
Did
I'm going to do that, but bigger, because I finally have, thanks to Alec, figured out how to run things in Pawsey.
Ah, okay.
So I can do that without the overhead of Stromlo servers, which spent most of yesterday dying.
So,
and wasn't even our fault.
Yeah.
Matthew, did you look at QEU versus Lambda Squared?
No, I need to do that.
Okay, yeah, I would strongly urge that before even doing a Faraday spectrum. I mean, there's so many ways to get garbage in a Faraday spectrum, and you really want to look at QNU versus Lambda Squared. I did it for a couple of sources in this Beam 20 that I was working on. And
I saw your posts on the Slack.
No, those were not QNU.
All right.
So I did a couple of QNU ones, which I really didn't understand, so I would urge you to look at those first before trying to figure out what's going on with the Faraday spectrum.
Can do. I'll do that today, though.
Correct.
And I also did a very brief look at MVSS on the beams they've been to get. And they line up, so that's good. I'll do something deeper today.
Cool, very good. How about yourself, Emil?
I was mostly looking into some artifacts that we're getting in some of the Rex images. Mm-hmm. Turns out that, at least with the ASCAPsoft pipeline, if an antenna is not available during the bandpass but then becomes available during the observation, it doesn't flag it. So not having a valid bandpass calibration for that antenna, you know, just introduces all sorts of muck into the image.
Yes.
So that you may have seen a post by Julie regarding that they've stopped processing on racks until this is resolved.
Ah, that's what that was.
Because
okay.
There's a huge number of fields which are just basically rubbish.
Right, okay. Well, that's comforting at least that it's something relatively trivial. Like
yes,
that,
exactly.
Right?
Yeah. So initially I was thought, oh, it's got something to do with the sun because we just happened to look at those because we wanted to see what impact the sun had on some of these fields because they were actually relatively close
right.
to the sun.
Uh-huh.
But it turned out it had nothing to do with the sun. It was just not flagging an antenna that should have been flagged.
Mm.
So that was basically most of my input yesterday.
Right. Well, that's pretty good input, I think. So what's the typical kind of amplitude of band pass? You know, is it sort of typical scale? Is it one, or is it typical one? Typically one?
No. So it varies. Because we have... these on-dish calibrators, they tend to, it's varied from different levels, depending what they decide to use for the on-dish calibrator. So at one stage it was something like of order 10. Now it's typically of order 0.15 or something like that in terms of the scaling of the original visibilities to what you need to scale it to in order to get it.
Right, so an on-bandpass corrected baseline actually has really high amplitude compared
yes.
to the bandpass corrected ones.
That's right.
Yeah, okay.
And at one stage, they're actually incredibly low. So it just depends on what they're doing with the ODCs, because that tends to add an extra scale factor in there.
Yeah. Well, it's a good thing it's high now, because you probably wouldn't have spotted it so easily if it was the other way around, right? You'd have higher noise.
No,
it wouldn't have been like prominent artifacts, right?
It's hard to say, because they all get... Well, yeah, I guess you're right. Yeah.
I think.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Yeah, if it were close to one, then you probably wouldn't have noticed it at all.
Probably, yeah. Interesting.
So hopefully that'll be fixed. I mean, there's a simple fix, and that's just to, if you see certain antennas are flagged, just flag them explicitly. But ideally, it should pick that up from the bandpass calibrator automatically as part of the pipeline.
Yeah, yeah. Or whatever the CTEL fly or whatever it's called should just say, well... Don't give it a default solution. Give it a look.
Yes. Give them all.
That's right. Cool. Excellent.
I think I may have just found what is causing Fitz rotate to fall over. It caused one of my scripts to fall over. And that there's still some stuff hiding in the header. There's the PC terms.
Oh.
Isn't there? Are they the field distortion?
I think so.
Yeah, but so there's one per PC 0102 or whatever.
Oh my gosh.
They describe rotations, I think, between the different axes in the FITS file. And so if you have useless Stokes axis in there, then there'll be ones that are numbered number 4 in there. And then anything that does any like tries to read the header will then assume it sees one of these and then assumes it's a 4th axis lurking. So I don't know, which is what caused my MyScripts to fall in. I don't know how much the FITS rotate talks to that. I'm assuming it probably does. It has to talk to the header, right? Because it does the...
Has to, I guess, yeah.
So I think that's maybe what's causing it to fall over.
Should be an easy fix then.
Yeah, so I'm just removing those currently, and I'll see if that I can actually make things go again without falling over in a heap. If we can get this going, I'm very keen to try and get my hands on. If we can try and find some fields with diffuse emission, that'd be really cool.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, a question I had the other day, which I forgot to ask, was that would it be worthwhile even getting a single image from Ottore or Paddy to in the Scorpio field if we can, although again, I don't know how far along the Scorpio fields are in terms of processing. Probably nowhere at the moment.
Hard to say. Don't know. Yeah, I think the Scorpio, don't remember. I think Craig was on top of that.
Yeah.
From Moran, but don't know.
I can't remember if I raised it in this forum or the other forums that I was in yesterday, because I had several meetings. Did we talk about things like what baselines to use and whether some UV tapering or what weighting to use in the case of diffuse emission? Because you'd actually want something different for that as opposed to
point
sources?
Yeah, no, we didn't talk about that at all.
Okay. I think at the moment, ASCAP, the ops team, if they're doing any of the processing, they just assume the same robust minus 0.5, which is pretty close to uniform weighting, and all baselines. So
and they cut 200 meters and shorter.
Yes, right. Even worse. Yeah. doing everything. They're doing everything out of their way to get rid of diffuse emission. Whereas you want all of that stuff.
But some of us do.
Yes. But it's just something to keep in mind that even though you may not see a tremendous amount of diffuse emission, there may actually be a significant amount in there. It's just the imaging mode is not being really ideal for that type of emission.
Yeah. Well, probably be good as well to look at some, to study in particular some fields with a known, bright giant radio galaxy or, cluster halo or something, to make sure that, we're not losing that stuff too.
Yeah.
Because, some of the science applications for RACs would certainly be harmed by, if you're losing that kind of diffuse emission, right?
RACs even more so, because that definitely does cut off the shorter baselines.
Mm-hmm.
Because the idea was that we're mainly using it for a point source catalog.
Yep.
But
if people are going to start doing, then people will inevitably start looking through to find, cluster halos and GRTs and things.
So Dave mentioned yesterday, this is where we're looking at these artifacts, because he just, for laughs, imaged the SN1006 RACS observation.
Well, it wasn't just for laughs, but anyway.
And that looked horrendous because of these artifacts, but he re-imaged it with the appropriate antennas flagged. You could make out SN1006,
but very faint.
Yes.
Yeah, we saw rough and ready version of that yesterday, actually.
Okay.
Despite
there actually being a lot of flux in there, that source has actually got a lot of large-scale flux.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Ideally, you want to bring that out if you're looking for diffuse polarization.
Sure. Good, okay.
Maybe that's something I could play with.
Yeah, I think we want to... Well, okay, this is a discussion to have with Aiden, though, probably. Is, because it's tangled up with the question of, is there more than one purpose to RACS, right? Its primary purpose is to generate the global sky model, right?
Yes.
Is there more than one purpose and, related to science outcomes and, to what degree do those drive the designs of the processing? Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't think we can answer that question, right?
Well, I guess the answer is yes, there are going to be many different goals. Possibly one, looking at polarization, because that wasn't initially considered, at least upfront. Transients is the other one.
Yep.
Diffuse polarization clearly be another, particularly if you have the whole sky. I guess it'd be crazy not to.
You would think, But I mean, it strikes me, I think I've mentioned this statement before as well, it strikes me that one of the things that really should be done early on at this stage is, develop a model, a catalog from a RACS area, and demonstrate that you can take that model and calibrate a proper full-track observation of the same area.
So I've done that to some degree, but I haven't done that with ASCAPsoft.
Right.
So I did that with CASA.
Mm-hmm.
And it was actually beautiful. I mean, it actually gave a better image than if you just...
did self-count, basically.
Yeah. Because you're actually telling it these are point sources, as opposed to trying to deem off something in the presence of calibration errors, which doesn't make that assumption to first order.
Yeah, if you can skip one or two self-call cycles, that's a win, right?
Yes, and not only that, I did a bandpass calibration on the field as opposed to using 934, which again is a bonus because it means you're actually fixing the flat scale and the astrometry in that field rather than just assuming that an observation you did 12 hours ago on 934 is still valid by the time you observing that field.
Yeah, to the extent that the flux scale and astrometry and the RACS image are correct, then yes.
Yes. There will have to be some bootstrapping. We can't assume that. So this is going to be the first step, but we have to take auxiliary information to fix the flux scale in each of those. It may be better if we're mostly on the meridian in doing the observations. The problem at the moment is some of these are down at low elevations.
Oh, right. Why does it matter? Oh, just because of elevation, not because of the meridian in particular.
Just as high elevation as possible. Pointing right down at the horizon and all the crap in between. Because we have seen that. So even that early observation that we had, it was very clear that some of the sources were not quite right in terms of the flux scale. But that was, in fact, one of the observations got cut off after a minute because it basically hit the elevation limit. So it was really scraping the ground for some of that.
Okay.
Yeah, so there's certainly plenty of room for improvement. This is just version 0.1, I think, at the moment.
Yeah, you can learn a lot of tools.
But it's a good proof of concept, just to see what we can do.
Indeed.
And just to add, all of these things can be done after the fact as well, you know, after the observation.
The processing stuff, yeah, right. Yeah, but I guess part of my point was that, you know, if you discover that, you know, RACS as currently being done is not quite deep enough to properly do calibration on a full track observation, then you do have to reobserve, go deeper.
Well, we're going to do, we'll be reobserving anyway, regardless. Yeah. So having a version 0.1 of RACS is useful anyway, just from a baseline transient type thing to see how much the sky changes for many other reasons as well. But
it's, yeah, built into sensitivity. Right?
Yeah. So,
okay, good. I don't want to cut you short. I just want to make sure that we can hear from everybody as well. So anything else from you, Alec?
No.
Okay. So let's go around online. Larry, you're up on the screen. Do you want to just say briefly about the spectra that you posted on Slack today?
Sure. So I thought I'd take a step back and look at Stokes Eye stuff. And I downloaded Beam 20 and just found one of the brightest sources in the field and grabbed Eye as a function of frequency. And then just plotted log I, log nu, and that's what's on this Slack channel. And the ripples are clear. And there's obvious curvature as well. If you fit a straight line to that obvious curvature. Now, curvature can be real. The spectra can be curved. Do you have that up there? Are you seeing? Yeah, there you go. So the spectra can be curved. So I went to another source and measured its curvature, and it was basically identical. So you see the blue and the red there. So those are two different sources. So as best I can tell, there are three separate problems. And they're going to need to be pointed out to the ACES team or something, because somebody's going to have to sort them out. The first one is that the two sources had exactly the same spectral index within 0.5%. And that's unlikely. They both came out to minus 0.48. I don't even know how you would make that happen, but it's suspicious. The second thing is that they both show the same curvature to the spectrum, which is unexpected, and therefore almost certainly instrumental. And then the third thing is the ripples. So there are either two or three separate issues in there. And I'll take a look at the RACS tomorrow and see what the LINMAS is doing. but in a sense, Linmos is just going to hide the problems. You know, looking at the cubes is going to tell you what that input data looks like. So, you know, are the problems are at a significant level. The ripples are at a couple, you know, 2 to 4% level. The curvature is maybe at about a 5% level. So this would definitely be a limiting factor for science if it's not, you know, sorted out. And, you know, it'll pump into the polarization as well, kind of its second order. It's a first order problem for continuum, kind of second order problem for polarization. So, George, did you say there was some meeting today where you could pass this stuff on?
Yeah, I've already forwarded the message on to Aaron Chippendale, who's responsible for the beamforming calibration stuff. Because okay. he reckons it's in the beamforming, you know, the beamformer calibration stage.
The ripple.
Yeah.
You mean the ripples?
Yeah.
Yeah, but yes, what about the other two issues?
Yeah, that's a good point. I'm not sure where that belongs, actually.
I guess I don't fully understand the scale. Is that...
Okay, yeah, so the plot on the left is log I versus log frequency. So that's straightforward.
Yeah, sorry, I've got it here as well.
Yeah.
Let's
see. Just make sure you're on the same plot.
Yeah, so that's log I versus log frequency across the whole band. And then the straight line fit is a slope of a spectral index of minus 0.48. And so I just subtracted that out from the log. And so what you have on the right is the log I residual after subtracting the spectral slope. And so it's like 10 to those numbers if you want it in regular units.
Okay. So is this, where does this source sit with respect to the beam?
Well, there were two different locations. One was in the southeast, maybe about, I don't know, 2/3 of the way out. And then the other one was, I think, opposite that, up in the northwest. The coordinates are on there. So somebody could go back and look at where beam 20 was pointed and see where these things are.
And is this a primary beam corrected cube, or is it just a raw cube?
Yeah, which data set was this now? Was this G23 or what is this?
G23.
Yeah. I mean, I guess I'd expect to see something regardless because, you know, we're just using a simple Gaussian if it's a primary beam corrected cube.
And I don't see
clearly not. Okay.
Oh, you're saying if it's not primary beam corrected, then each frequency is going to be different.
Yes. So you will get a frequency dependent primary beam effect on the source. It'll actually steep.
Sure.
Should steepen the source.
Deepen it, yeah.
But yeah. In a bit of a weird way, depending on where it is.
Yeah, but it won't induce curvature.
It can, because it's.
It would have to be off by the null in that case, right?
Because in reality, we have elliptical beams. We don't have Gaussian beams, and it's different in X and Y. So depending on where it is, you know, one will fall off more quickly than the other.
So the question is, what's the quickest way to test whether this is primary beam?
Probably look at it, I think, right? Just
if the noise goes up at the edge, then it's primary beam correct.
I didn't burn out the image. I was just looking for the bright sources, so I didn't look at that.
I mean, for me, the biggest concern is actually more the ripple than anything else. Because I've seen that in a few instances, and it's present in all sorts of ways, you know, in the different polarization Stokes terms and in the band pass. And
sure. I'm additionally suspicious, though, of these spectral indices that came out to within 0.5% of each other. And I don't know what to say about that at this point. I mean, I could do more sources, but it's hard to believe that I'd pick two random sources and I'd end up with identical spectral indices, basically.
The good thing is this should appear in both NVSS and SUM, so we could actually get an estimate of what the real spectral index is and do a comparison.
Yeah. One of them, the first one, is actually a double source, so that would be, there would be some confusion there.
The second
one is a single compact component, which looks pretty isolated. So that one could certainly be checked. Okay, that's it from me.
Okay, thanks, Larry. I wonder, in the second plot, I just want to mention a thought that I had, which may be quite stupid. In this one, the phase of the ripple is flipped. And Larry just said that one is on one side of the field, the other one's on the other side of the field. I wonder if this is relevant to, you know, tracking down where the problem is introduced.
It could be.
Yeah. If there's like a symmetry in the field, you know, if the ripple flips from one side of the field to the other or something like that. Hard to say with just two sources, I guess, but it's clearly, you know, flipped here.
Yeah.
I think I'll give this plot to Aaron as well. So you said that it was definitely opposite sides of the field center, Larry?
Yes.
Two sources? Okay,
yep.
Great.
Well,
okay, thank you.
96% confident.
Okay. Well, that's pretty close to it. All right. Good. I see that there's two other people online. I guess Cameron is one of them, I hope. Hi, Cameron.
Still here.
Do you have any news for us?
Sort of, I guess. I have an update. It's been a bit of a frustrating day, to be honest. So I started off intending to work on testing the 1D pipeline, Strata pipeline, where I starting off with just the cubes and intending to extract RM spectra for all the sources. And one of the required inputs for the pipeline is the Stokes-I source list, which is expected from Celavi. And in the absence of that, I was going to run my own source finding using Aegean. And I ended up fighting with Aegean. I could not get it to run on the data set for some reason. And given that other people seem to have had success, I'm not sure what the cause of it is, if there's something wrong with the installation here or what. And I eventually got frustrated enough, I wasn't interested in diagnosing it anymore. So I thought I would try out the 3D RM synthesis pipeline. And then realized that wouldn't work either, because the 3D RM synthesis pipeline, as currently written, because of the large file sizes, we have to break all of the 3D data sets into smaller chunks to push it through the RM synthesis. And the current method we have for chunking up the data relies on the data being in the CADC archive, because they have a nice little cutouts tool. So can't do that. But then the thought crossed my mind is that is very inconvenient. We should have a chunking tool that can be run locally on any data set. That is something that should exist in RM tools for anyone to use, because everyone is going to have big data sets soon or now. So I've started writing a routine to start chunking up large cubes. And Brian suggested, I was chatting with him, he suggested I should try montage tools because they were basically built for FITS manipulation. And so I spent most of the afternoon fighting to try to get that installed and failing. So it's just not been my day.
No.
But I feel like the fact that I'm struggling to install montage is a sign that other users might. So I feel I should build a solution that doesn't require RM tools users to install other packages. So I feel like that's enough motivation for me to write my own little tool for that, that works just within Python, within the dependencies we already have.
Mm-hmm. Oh, geez. Computers are a real challenge, aren't they?
Yeah. as I said, just not tonight. But yeah. Hopefully tomorrow
will go better. Sure. What's that?
Hopefully tomorrow will go better.
Yeah, I'm sure it'll be much better, Cameron.
Yeah, that's my report for the day.
Okay. Thank you, Cameron. And commiserations as well.
Thank you.
Okay, and who's our mystery? Hi, Shannon. I was going to guess, but I didn't. I didn't want to guess. How are you today?
Hello. Good. How are you?
All right.
I've made a kind of rough leakage as a function of position plots in the SN 1006 fields.
Awesome.
Yeah, I think I have it open. I'll stick it up here. Mm-hmm. There we go. You see that?
Not currently. Oh, there it is. Yep.
Okay, good. yeah, it's just fairly rough. So I just took a single pixel Stokes V spectrum and divided by a Stokes I spectrum for about, I think, 2200 of the sources. Just anything above a flux of a Stokes I flux of 2 millijanskis, because there was 8200 sources in the field and I didn't think that was necessary. A lot of them were really low flux. So anyways, it's maxed out at a 4% leakage, just because I was I took the median across the band as well. So green is positive, yellow is negative. Yeah, there's a lot of sources, a pretty good number of sources that are above that 4% maximum. And just scrolling through the first couple hundred, I saw a few that were like 10 or 15%. So I'm going to have a better look at the high values tomorrow, I think. But yeah, I mean, I can definitely see that there's a lot of leakage at the edges of the beam, which I think is a reasonable thing. But there's definitely something happening in the center there as well. There's a really big ripple through the center as well near the supernova remnant. So
Shannon, you're saying this is median across the spectrum?
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. Have you looked at any of the spectra of the really high ones?
No, not yet. That's what I think I'll do tomorrow.
Yeah, I think that'd be great. See if it's coming from the band edges or where it's coming. I mean, the fact that you've taken the median means it's probably in a lot of the channels, but it still would be useful to see.
I know. Can you see the cursor?
Yep.
Yeah, this bit here and down here, I know that there's artifacts, those kind of like spider web looking artifacts in these regions here as well. So that might, but anyways, have a better look at the high leakage or the high V fraction ones tomorrow.
Great. This is so high.
4%.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, the numbers that we were looking at yesterday from the the rocks mosaics were actually quite high as well.
Because the fields that I've processed, I generally get like 0.1%, 0.2%. So
no.
I wonder if there's something not quite right with the calibration.
No.
There could be something not quite right with what I've done as well. So.
It's not inconsistent with what George was saying.
No, that's right. Yeah.
His Stokes V.
Yeah, I think if we're doing something wrong, we're doing it similarly wrong.
Okay. Well, that makes me feel slightly better.
Yeah, so yesterday, so Andrew isn't here, Andrew Zick isn't here, but he was looking at I'm looking at the beams there. He was looking at results from the mosaics.
Right.
And there he, you know, had lots of points that were up around 1-2% in V over I. And that was from the data that you calibrated for 8141, which I think was with CASA, no? With the leakage correction, right?
Thought so.
So I'm not sure why we're getting such large leakage values either. It seems a little bit peculiar.
Is this Proxima field that
yeah.
I imaged? There was nothing above 0.2% except for the one source that was of interest. That was 14%, and that was like a huge outlier. It stuck out like a sore thumb.
So can I just ask Shannon, never mind. Forget it. Well, yeah, okay. Is it where are you getting, it's just the pixel values basically, right? So it's not like source finding results, but actually just pixel values from the cubes.
I took the C'est la vie source finding, the source list that C'est la vie outputted, and then I just did a minimum cut at 2 millijanskis, so that ended up with, yeah, the brightest 2200. So it's from the source list, yeah.
Okay, but
and then a single values... pixel, and then, yeah, and then on that source, a single pixel through it.
Right. Okay, good. Right. So I guess there could be some kind of resolution effect if the V and I beams are different, right?
They could.
If some of the sources are resolved, right? And the beam is different.
So there could, if you actually take it at a pixel, there is a situation where I described yesterday where sometimes it seems like the Stokes V peak is slightly offset from the Stokes I, which may make, so if you take the Stokes I value at the position of the Stokes V peak, you may actually find that it's weaker in I than it actually really is. Mm. That could give make it look more polarized than it is. If that makes any sense.
I think so, yeah.
I don't really understand why that offset exists, but I have noticed it.
But the consistent results that we were seeing here, consistent sort of roughly numerically with the 10 of 6 field, was done completely differently, where we had a catalog from I and a catalog from V. We cross-matched them, and we used empirically decided that a good batch radius was 4 arcseconds because the histogram of separations sort of dropped at 4 arcseconds, and then there was junk beyond it.
Yeah, that would make sense.
So we're allowing, I think, for small shifts between the peak position and I and V, and getting similar results to this as well. So I think maybe there's some subtle effect, but I wouldn't expect it to be driving all these numbers up by a factor of 10, right?
Actually, I didn't generate Stokes V for the racks.
Yeah, I did.
Using CASA.
Using WS Clean, I think.
So I wonder if WS Clean is a bit worky. Could be. Because I've always had trouble with it, with polarization.
Yeah, it could be. And these images were all from ASCAPsoft that you're using now, Shannon, is that right?
I think so, yes.
Yeah.
Yes,
they came out of the pipeline.
ASCAPsoft in the header, so yes.
Oh, okay. Okay. All right, well, we've got some puzzling to do here, I think. Can you post that image on the Slack channel?
Yep. Thanks. Yeah.
Okay. Good. Okay, we've got some puzzling to do, I think, the remainder of this week, but we're making good progress. I think this is really coming together nicely. There's nobody else online, I think, is there?
I don't think so.
Okay. All right, well, I think at this point now we'll sort of get into just the, continuing the work. We've got a CASDA presentation and discussion that in about 2 hours from now. So if anybody's still online, I think Cameron, you were planning on joining that, weren't you?
Yeah.
And Jennifer.
Pop back in 2 hours time.
Great. Okay. And Jennifer too, I think, right?
Probably, yeah.
I think so. Yeah. Okay, good. So we'll stay online as always, but if you need to disconnect, we'll see you tomorrow. Thanks everyone.
Just a thought. There is one difference between the observations that I was looking at and these, and that's that mine was a boresight observation. So maybe there is something unusual going on with beamformed for footprint style observations compared to a bore site.
Yeah, yeah. Although, you know, Shannon's map there had quite a lot of leakage in the middle. But then again, there was a supernova and all kinds of artifacts, so who knows what's going on there.
So there is a bore site SN1006 observation as well. It went on, happened quite a while back. Actually, that was the one that I imaged for one of the newsletters. I can't remember what it was. I still got the data because it wouldn't be hard to generate Stokes V for that if I still had the data.
One of the things I want to do with, you know, fiddling around with various ways to present the catalogs that I've made, you know, with so many different beams and sources, what I can do is just do, you know, the beam ones, the beams, beam 15s from all different footprints and stack those on top of each other. Look at the, you know, the pattern per beam, basically.
The thing is that all of these other footprints, I don't think they have a position that's at ball size.
No, they don't.
They're always offset from that.
Yep.
So I'm just wondering if there is something magical about ball site that makes those observations better.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Just a foot. I mean, it could be something else as well.
Yeah.
It just does surprise me because I always look at Stokes V for these single ball site observations, and it's literally 0.1%,
mm-hmm.
maybe 0.15, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So the data is really, really nice.
There's no ports on the optical axis. There's no ports on the optical axis on the path, is there?
That I don't know. Because, even if there is, it'd be biased towards either X or Y, because they're not at the same place at the same time.
Right. Exactly. Or ever.
Clark Kent's dimensions. I don't know if it's worth mentioning, but I think there's a morning tea at 10. I don't know.
Is it the one in the SOC, is it?
Yeah.
Tea. Is there a coffee place on this floor, or is it downstairs, Joe?
Well, they have plunger coffee and biscuits. It's basically what they provide.
I'm decaffeinated. It's time to fix that, I think.
Okay.
I mean, is there a coffee machine on this floor?
That I don't know. I normally live on the floor below.
Yeah. I don't even know
really
if I can get back to
the
operation. Anyway, I'm going to go seek that out.
All right.
I'm just going to go downstairs to the one I know.
Yeah,
right.
That's probably the easiest.
Hey.
See you soon. Well.
The myriad reorder actually doesn't take too long. I think, again, it was falling over because it had too many axes flying around.
Mm.
Unfortunately, the cuffs one is sec folding, but it seems like Savesh pushed a fix relating to something like that in the rotate script only a few weeks ago. Mm. And so I don't know if that's on the current build that's on pausey. I've asked to see what they can do. See how we go.
Right.
What time?
There's a morning tea downstairs if you want to join.
Ah, I'll be there.
Get some pickies and coffee.
Whereabouts?
It'll be in the interaction space, it's called.
Okay.
It's next to the lecture theater, I think. Because
yeah.
I just walked past it.
Okay.
Yeah, basically.
Cool.
That's right. Yep.
Load equals.
Well, I just got my worm unraveled, so.
I saw that. That looks
heck
great.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm really pleased about it. I read a paper on a geometry paper last night, and I understood it. And
did I actually use reasonable bloody notation?
Oh, yeah, no, it was from 1989.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so it was just like, here is how to do the thing. I'm like,
thank you.
Actually, it was the same notation, but. But I understood what it meant. And it turns out there's a trick if you're using samples, which is not what I was doing yesterday. And when you use the trick, which essentially just says that you want it to be smooth, you get a really nice plot. Ah!
Oh.
That's good, right?
That's really nice.
Yeah, I mean, that doesn't actually unravel the worm, but that's like, that I can unravel the worm to 2D now.
It's 2D.
Yes.
Ooh.
I don't want 2D, I want 3D, but...
Oh.
But I can do 2D. I can do 2D or I can do 4D. I can't do 3D. I can do 3D if I can figure out the local orientation of the line. But then you have to sort of break a symmetry.
Yeah.
You have to decide on two directions, so... It's fine.
Excellent. Axis 0. Would we be able to have a look at this cleaning tool again?
Which one?
Like making it overload.
Yeah, absolutely.
That'd be good. Because I haven't delved into that.
Yeah, no.
I'm but a simpleton.
My drive.
Of the Python script.
My drive. Oh, lovely. Got a memory error when Bane was trying to write. Right. It'll be like that, is it?
Shoot. Header.
Please don't tell me the mosaic is too big. Oh, they got a printout of the mosaic?
Yeah, I saw that.
It's massive. And they just put it up on the wall. It's taking the entire wall. And take a photo of it and show it to my mother. This is what I've been working on. I'm so excited about Raft. Alright,
Trump axis. Hang on, 2 and 3.
I'm gonna make an electric field. It's gonna be great.
Axis 2. Yes. Very good. This is what I want. This is what I want. Where is my script? There it is. Hello.
Here we are. Perfect. Thanks a lot.
Hello.
How are you doing?
Pretty good. I love that geometry question I was working on yesterday.
It's got a line instead of a worm.
It's a
line on your worm.
It's a line on the worm. I found the backbone.
Alright.
I think I noticed I found today in the remove useless axis script.
Yep.
It doesn't remove the distortion cards.
Oh, right.
PC blah 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 blah.
Right, okay.
I
should remove this?
Yes. Because it causes if things are talking to the WCS or just the header in general.
Yep.
Then if it sees the PC with a 4 in it, then it assumes it's a fourth axis. Working somewhere.
Okay, cool. Alright, good point. Let's get rid of that.
Oh, this is too cool. Look at this one.
Oh.
That's the tangents.
Oh.
Which I can now find.
That's very nice.
I'm so pleased. It looks really good. But yes, I can assist with other things.
How about... Oh, yeah, some coffee.
That's a good plan. I just did that.
Oh.
But I'm gonna sit here. If you go past the biscuits, can you grab me a biscuit?
I can grab you a biscuit.
Thank you. Now I am the only person in the meeting. Take a selfie with them. Oh no.
Right. Let the scienting begin.
Annoying, isn't it? Thank you.
Jesus.
the end game here.
Listen. What is that, sir?
Still no one here.
Yeah, I know. It's pretty dark. How's it going?
Hmm?
All right.
had a choice. So I got quad.
Oh, heck. What are these?
We've got those ones in Monte Carlo.
I have one of these ones, thank you. You'll be a corner there, happy with the colors.
Yeah, that'd be awesome.
Alright. Yeah. There's chairs over there, I'm still playing.
Okie dokie, where is that script gone? I don't want these. Let me just get stuff up.
Oh, back.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Very good, cleaner.
One on Rappler is giving me technically sensible results that are dumb. It's like, yes, these link up.
Okay.
This is the iron cleaner class we started building yesterday.
Okay.
So in that we have the clean loop.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess what we want to be updating is that previously, before it entered the while loop in the original script, it defined these arrays. So which were just a copy of dirty FDF.
Okay.
And just empty arrays with that same shape.
Yep. Okay.
And it was then it wanted to update those for each pixel.
Okay. So let's see if we can get it working without doing anything fancy first.
Mm.
Like just get it back to working using the OO.
Yeah.
Sound good?
Sounds good.
All right.
So where should these be defined?
They can be there.
Yep.
I don't see any problem with that because they're at the moment, every time the loop happens, they make their own, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But should we make this? The thing is, I guess we don't want to necessarily copy the entire dirty FDF, right? We just need the single, we just need that one pixel.
Oh, yeah.
Mm.
Yeah, you're right. Okay. How about you write this as if it's not being run in a loopy thing and actually put YIXI?
Mm.
As the args.
Right.
And then make, in fact, I think you can even, we can't assume the RMSF is the same everywhere.
No.
So pass in YIXI and.
But I mean, that can just send, if there is some RMSF array that it can get hold of.
I mean, you've got one.
Yeah.
Pass in
Craig Anderson.
The 30 FDF as well.
Well,
then just take out the pixel you need, right?
Yeah. And it's 30 FDF.
But you need to pick up
a start.
No,
yeah,
just like, yeah, 30 FDF equals 30 FDF.
Oh,
yes.
It's just like tooling around upstairs, trying to find them. I still look down
the
side. The lights are off.
Like in the function. No, do that bit.
Okay.
That bit's fine.
Still need
to. Yeah, you still need to have the dot. So you have all these things for free, right? You don't need to get them.
We want.
Colon YXI.
Right?
Yeah.
YXI. Yep.
DAing. What?
And now you get
DAing. No, there was the morning tea was undone. So.
Yeah, I think that should just be fine.
Although now, so now the resid FDF, we
we
can remove these.
Yes, correct. They can all go away.
Actually, yeah, that's
we may hit some shape issues, but we can make them pretty easy.
That's fine. The other things that index. So all the things that index no longer need to index.
Yes.
And that means that these ones that only index a little bit also don't need to index.
Yeah.
Bum, bum, bum.
Hey, George, do you know, I saw the other day Brian put out like a question to Twitter, and I don't know if a serious answer has come back yet, and that is the impact of Starlink on RFI. It's the SpaceX beaming Wi-Fi at the ground.
Oh.
Yeah, seriously, that's like, what are they going to put up, like 60,000 satellites or some bullshit?
Because in principle, it seems absolutely terrifying.
Yeah.
Depending on, you know, what frequency they use. But even, you know, whether it's, I don't know. Like,
well, it's around 2 gigahertz, I guess.
Yeah, if it's 2.4 gigahertz or otherwise, yeah. It seems like.
Seems like that's pretty shockingly bad.
Yeah.
Well, especially because
Elon
Musk's
on a tear again.
also depends on what the, you know, how well they control, you know, out of band emission as well. And
yeah.
Like if they've got a square bandpass,
mm.
you know, whatever in whatever their normal, you know, their license frequency range is. If the bandpass is sharp, it goes ringing out other frequencies, I think. So the impact could be even worse than just that particular frequency range being zapped. Well, that's horrifying.
Mm.
Okay, thanks for that.
So, sorry, but
what we're really saying,
so I think
is
the point of Brian's question was like, is it really as bad as you initially think?
I saw.
Yeah.
Another Brian.
So the clean loop itself, does it need to actually return anything? Or will it, I guess, what should it return in order to give us what we want? Because I naively was putting in returns.
Yes,
but
returns will make sense. Yes,
but
returns are good.
It was only returning, like, the single pixel value?
Yes, that's good.
Yeah, but it wasn't stacking them.
That's fine.
As
you
in,
can
but,
put them together later.
But that's, I don't, it seemed like it was overriding it somehow. As in that I was only getting, like, I wasn't getting every pixel back.
That's weird. Write the function naively in a side effect free way, and we should be okay. So, I mean, that looks fine for now.
Mm.
Let's just blitz through it line by line, and see if there's anything weird. RMSF array is fine, and NPADFI is fine. You're in Python 3.
Mm-hmm.
You're in Python 3.
Mm-hmm.
Excellent. That matters for this.
I refuse to use Python 3.
Yeah,
well, I'm going to bloody hold out until all of my stuff's
you've
broken.
You've got seven months tops until. Pip drops support soon.
I plan to be retired or fired by then.
Yeah.
I'm so okay to share
Python 3.
All right. ZFDS looks fine.
It may also just be the way I was. So
this all looks fine.
The next thing I have is the correct way to call these.
Okay.
So we
can clean it. Yeah.
Yep. And
that's
then
right.
we give it all the things.
We give it all the things.
Yep. And then.
Don't call it test.
Yeah. This is my main.
Yeah. So I mean, this is just a normal object that you're familiar with now, right? Like,
yeah.
Like, there's nothing too fancy here. Yes. RMC.cleanloop will indeed do the thing you want.
Cool.
Though I did an annoying at you and suggested that you don't pass things in as individual things. Does pool.map let you have something sensible like a splat arg?
And a what now?
Like, do you have to pass in a list of args, or can you... Neither of these are current versions of Python. That's really good. I love Google. Let me just check a thing real quick.
Specifically, I'm using Schwimbad pool.
Schwimbad?
Yeah.
Oh, Schwimbad!
I mean, it should be the same, right?
Yeah. That it is when you call, when it's using multiprocessing. Das Schwimbad.
Das Schwimbad, yeah.
One of my supervisors, who's German, was very surprised when I mentioned the name of that. Schwimbad, why? So it just needs to be an iterable.
But
we don't have async in this, it only has map.
We don't have apply async?
No.
It's really
bad, yeah.
Okay. Oh, okay. That's fine.
Do.
Consider using that map. Cool, that's fine. So you can take
bot.
Our inputs. No, it's going to be this one, isn't it?
So that's inputs up to RMC.
Yeah, we can just do, like, args. args.
Okay.
I mean, I think there's a functool thing for that. And then we just write that ourselves. Wow, I like that there's just not a list of things this has.
Just a list of examples. Yeah, so I discovered before that it was looped correctly, but not actually saving any of the data.
What's that?
It was looping correctly, but not actually saving any of the data.
Right?
Yeah.
That's always good. Classic.
Oh dear. I involved myself in an email chat, a Slack chat, and a Mattermost chat. I'm screwed.
Yeah,
it's
like
that.
That's
cool.
Yeah.
You're never getting anything. So the issue current, there are also these things here that also define the data. Oh, that's what we want. That's good. That's fine.
Yep, that's fine.
Mask array, id account array. Oh, the id account array is defined here.
Are we using it later?
Yes.
Zap.
Yeah, I think it's the id account array is updated here.
Zap. So we need to get down to curability today.
Oh, we did pass it in. No, we pass it into the.
Yeah. So what we can do after we get it working is we can actually just update those properly and then they'll just be properties of the cleaner.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we'll need to think about what that's gonna look like. But for now, just get it working.
Alright.
And then we refactor.
Oop, let's see if this actually works.
Let's see what my Aegean job is running. Oh good, it's running.
Zap.
How many cores do we have on the visualization?
Does he get an LSCP? I think you have one node on Zeus, whatever that happens to be.
Alright.
Zeus.
Anyone know how many cores Zeus has?
What?
Anyone know how many cores a node on Zeus has?
Nope.
I'm just going to assume.
16.
Oh, 16! I could be doing this twice as fast. Although the bottleneck is actually the IO. Interestingly enough.
Oh, what
happened there? Let's see how it's going. This is still much faster than doing it on Strongly, though.
Whoa. What's whoa? This is all woeful.
Hey.
Bloody woeful. Spirit.
We're up to 17.
If there's a
situation. Halfway there.
Data. RMS.
Oh.
In cores.
I'm an idiot.
No cores.
No cores.
Oh no.
In cores 2.
Incidentally, I'm stupid.
Nope. can't pickle object due to our own thing.
I just wonder
what is
such a
pickled. I can't read that output. It's so small. Reduction.py multiprocessing cluster. What?
Oh, good lord.
A what? So it's the map failing. Can't pickle object lambda. Oh, it's the lambda head.
Yeah.
Okay, that's fine.
Pipe this sucker to work out. Boom! 30 beams. On the nose. Let's download these suckers.
I'm a problem solver.
I'm a problem creator.
Why does your keyboard feel different to mine? Or it's older and better.
It's that 2011 quality.
Try that. Yeah, mine's 2013.
Yeah, this laptop is a bit aged, isn't it?
It's got the.
It's got a wood keyboard. That's nice. And like an Ethernet port.
It does. It's got the.
Got C drive. We also have a C drive. Yeah.
Hooray, we did it.
Alright.
We broke it in a different way.
Yeah.
Oh wow, that's a weird looking broker shirt.
I see, that's the number of pixels.
Yeah.
Why?
It should be there twice.
Brian's Slack request.
What's Slack request?
His Slack request is I can't record anything else. And.
CC for just being a number.
What?
I don't record
it. Yes, it's our MSF array probably.
Let's keep or delete.
Well, it's happening under it.
That should be.
I think it should be.
Crocker discussion or anything else.
There. So,
yes, you probably want to index it. Oh my god, it's rolling the entire RMSF array every time. Index that thing. Oh my god.
Where's our MSF array first called?
Can we just like make a local RMSF array in this function that just indexes it and then never think about the fact we're rolling the entire image every time we do a pixel?
Yeah.
Also, I think I figured out why RMClean is slow.
No, this does just do the single pixel.
No, it doesn't.
My one doesn't. But
oh,
the original does.
Okay.
The truckers.
I figured out why yours.
Well, now I'm rejecting some of them.
I need to put an RMSF array.
Yeah.
That.
Yep.
Yeah.
So it's
well, if that'll confuse you,
signal noise ratio threshold of 8 now.
Well, it might be faster if you don't.
So don't redefine it, or
so I might do some
reading
at this point.
Yeah.
You're going
to
apply a
scary
legend, so I know what the circle sizes are.
Yeah. That's too complicated.
Oh, good job.
Okay.
Fair enough.
Okay, so that should be index peak.
Shannon Thunderwood. Yeah, so Shannon's got a similar plot.
Okay.
It's cool, but I think
that should be
maybe
enough.
Slightly.
Nope.
Slightly
so
too low
for
the size, so it's sort of picking up some noise as well.
It's unhappy in a different place now.
That's good, that's good.
Here we saw
Gauss 1D.
As you would have.
You had
here.
So also,
I was too busy.
That thing.
There it is.
That needs to be sliced.
really?
Is that?
Yeah.
I was like, I'm not skipping breakfast today. A healthy breakfast is the cornerstone of a productive day.
Did you answer
to
it?
McDonald's.
Did you answer Cyber?
That what?
Did you answer Cyber?
Cyber, no. I'm going to leave that to you because I felt you'd have a better sense of what you wanted to keep from yesterday.
Because
I'd be like, throw it all!
Oh, it's half max array.
Oh, God, I need to start programming, but I don't want to.
The full width half max array doesn't have a third axis. Good.
Nice. We're going to get more coffee in a bit.
Yes.
If you want to come with.
God, that's such a cool plot. This is my favorite plot that I've made. Look at that.
That's very nice.
It's going. Nice.
Ooh. It looks like it's doing things.
Ooh, exciting.
It may actually be cleaning now. Ooh, hello.
Ah, so close. It's a type error. Ooh,
right.
Funky looking. That's in clean FDF plus equals resid FDF.
Okay, so this is, I'm printing the shape of the output here, and it's 100 by 3, so it's not stacking up the pixels.
That's fine. Why would it stack the pixels? Yeah.
Well, as in...
It should just give us a list of pixels.
Yeah, but so it should give us the list of pixels. That should be... Well, it should.
Wait, what's the 3?
The 3, so the... Well, currently, it's returning... So it's returning clean FDF, the count array, and the edit count array, the clean component array, and the edit count array.
Right.
Here we go.
So it's cleaning at the restore part.
Alchemist. Cormac. I'm renaming my script with a underscore Cormac appended to the end because it's his approach that I'm going to try.
It works though.
Well, we'll see about that.
Well, you have the script. Speaking of the script that I sent you, that function.
Yeah.
Cool.
Got that. Yeah. Awesome. Thanks for that, man. Yeah. So I'm going to try and get this going, and today, and probably in the last 10 minutes today, I'll come to you and be like, it doesn't work.
This is the output shape.
Resid FDF is the wrong type, which is suspicious.
Resid FDF is this one. So that's one for 100.
But it's an object.
Mm.
So
see,
I don't trust
Larry's
spectral
ripple slash
curvature. Bet you it's not 100 dimensional. That's where you.
So do we know if that's
quite ripply?
Basically, you're doing an unpaired array of that. That actually doesn't work.
Doesn't surprise
me. Oh,
you.
I see.
Your problem.
Array is doing something very dumb.
Data,
print the output.
Yep.
I guess I don't know
printed,
what
yes,
data set that was. Whether it was primarily being corrected. And
I think you'll be like, what?
That's unexpected.
Where in the sky it was.
You mean where you've seen it before, or for the Larry's
one?
It's the Gamma 23 one, I think it's about to be released. Yep.
Love to reload.
Yes, I suspect nobody has looked.
Because that doesn't seem like the ripple I was seeing in Stokes V.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. It's exactly
it's,
the same.
It's returning
yeah,
the
same period. No. Exactly. Yeah.
That's the output? Or is it the output every time?
That's the output.
D-typing is complex. D-typing is complex.
The curvature, though,
yeah.
That, I mean, that could be just where it is in the
Yeah,
being.
Yeah, yeah.
Because if it has been corrected, well, even if it has been corrected, because we lost
the
record.
Yeah, there
could
be some.
No, that's
the true record.
Yeah.
Go back to your code. That's a good point. Well, maybe we could use this to constrain the true.
You want to output the shape?
A bit better. If we look at all the sources in the field, they've all got like a, you know.
That's fine.
Yeah.
I reckon we could use a lot of the rack stuff to actually build up an idea.
Can you print out
results? Use the same footprint over and over again.
Print it there.
No, print
it there.
Yeah. I mean, George is doing something sort of similar in some respects, but looking at Stokes B leakage in all the different fields for racks. Yeah. I think a lot of the framework will be there to after this week to do that sort of thing.
Oh,
is it not also odd mass? But so as far as
again, the best Python program right now.
Really?
I'm the best Python 2 programmer that I know.
Yeah.
All the good Python programmers aren't using it.
Okay, here we go. That's an array of arrays.
Yes. That's what I thought. Right. You need to run numpy.concatenate instead of numpy.array.
Mm.
What is this actually returning?
It's returning these three. The clean FDF, clean component init account.
Okay, let's change what it's doing. So instead of returning the init account array, which we know anyway, why are we replacing the init account array with this init account every time? That feels wrong to me. I think we want to actually update just this cell.
Yes.
Is this a YIXI?
Yes.
Yeah. So I think we actually just want to do this.
Yep.
And then we don't need to return it anymore.
Okay.
Right?
Yes.
Cool. Yep. Go. What's CC array? Yeah. Is that the model?
Notice
yes.
That's the array. They're on a phase with each other.
So we need
two sources are on opposite sides of the field center from each other.
Oh, right.
Boy,
so
it's
that actually might be wrong.
Good.
That's a good point. Yeah.
So store the output first.
Yeah.
And then for each thing in it, the model will be...
Maybe do that outside the pool, or else it'll do it many times. Yeah.
Here?
Yeah.
Okay. Model for model in output. And then we can just numpy.stack those. And then we can do the exact same for the...
I have it inputted as NV.
What's this thing called? This is the resid? Or the...
Which one?
The first output. The second one's the model. The first one's the clean. Oh, yes, you do. Sorry. I got into the habit...
The first one... the second one's the other way around. So the first one that comes out is
the clean.
That's the... Oh, the clean F.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry. Yes.
Yep. Try that, and then you don't need that anymore. And so the resid FDF will be... Are we storing it? What are we doing with the resids? We're not doing anything.
They're currently doing nothing.
That's
which
fine.
Which is how
we're adding on the resid FDF to the... Oh, Jesus.
Yeah, you have to restore the residual FDF to the clean.
Oh, no. What have I done?
It's a gigantic carry.
So big.
It's a gigantic carrot.
Does it die?
You pull out a carrot.
Is it a carrot or a carrot?
What
is it? Instead of carrot.
Yeah.
Jesus.
Right. It's a stubby one as well.
Yeah.
Conveniently shaped for that container.
Exactly. Yeah.
Little edge.
Yeah, because this, so...
So we don't need the FDF at the moment, right?
The clean FDF is that we add it, and then we have to restore the residuals back in.
Oh, gotcha.
That's what this does.
Okay, that should... Where are we doing... We're not getting the residuals.
No, we need them.
We need the residuals. The multi-process might not like... whatever. Just return them. Yeah. Oh dear, that looks... Oh no, that's fine.
It's a succotash. They are...
Now doing some bidding.
Nice.
Oh, that's a weird shape.
So it's clean residual, clean component. All right. Have the same name as this loop, surely not.
No. What's the problem?
The same clean not defined. Where is that?
Oh, right.
Oh, because I'm an
idiot.
Yeah. There we go. Always the solution.
It does help. Claims to a finish.
Oh,
sorry, it's claims.
I'm attempting to spy, but I saw my name there. Triggered my attention.
Yeah.
That's right, isn't it? Two sources sit on opposite sides of the name center.
Yep.
It's done stuff.
Huh?
It just seems to be in the wrong shape.
I thought I'd highlight a few of these little things with people.
Mm. Oh my god, it did it.
You said
it was gamma 23. Yep. That's right, isn't it? It's the gamma 23 data that Larry pulled us out of.
Yep.
And by the gamma 23, we mean the gamma 23, right? The one that's like currently poised for CASDA release.
It seems to have just been
re-related.
Why I've done it.
Yeah, the one that Susie was imaging, that's the one.
Yep.
Hey, Python experts, when you use hexbin, how can you color bar it? I get an error when I try to color bar after.
What's the error?
There's no mappable for the color bar.
Is it right after the?
Isn't it, and it's just you're not doing it. Are you doing it on an axis, or are you just doing the block to hexbin?
I did it on the axis.
Did you do axe.colorbar as well then?
Sorry.
Did you also then do axe.colorbar?
Oh.
And so you have to. But you also have to go like. Like, I don't know, image order, you know, map equals axe.hexbin. Not map, some variable name.
And don't call hex will bin.
So hexbin will return.
Hexbin will return its plot, and you might be able to pass that into color bar.
Yeah, then you do axe.color bar of whatever you call that.
Okay. Thanks, guys.
Once again, the schizophrenia of map what liberates his head.
It's so bad.
Well, it's a little bit awkward. I mean, it looked to me like I had to apply hexbin to the axis, not just as a command, basically. Or not as a method, you know what I mean? Whatever. I don't know what I'm talking about. I shall now shut up.
Look, I subtracted out the line.
Oh, you got a nice little fluffy cloud.
Yeah, which kind of makes sense. Now I just got to figure out how to, like...
For some reason, the shape is flipped. I can just dot T it then, right?
Yeah.
Which is fine.
Also, all the practices
are
negative below this cloud.
Matter most.
Hmm.
So, I mean,
if no, I remember I have better things to do today.
What
did seriously,
test vector
between Rax, Meta, I mean, between Slack, MetaMost, and bloody. I mean, there's got to be other communications channels that I've.
Facebook, Twitter.
Yeah.
Instagram.
Capers, unload all of these.
Hey, you're not doing it, are you?
Do you see Larry's post? Great.
What's that?
Do you see Larry's post of the busy days?
Which one was that? Recent, was it?
So it's not primary being corrected.
Ah, right.
So he actually lists two fairly different spectral indices for the
right.
Source.
That is likely to do this as well.
Hmm.
That's retraction.
Abort.
You seem to be flipped along one axis, guy.
Damn it, holy collection.
I think still
fine.
The wobble.
No, I did. No. Now
team
it's,
again.
It's one. Yeah, it's 180.
Just keep
your
team.
Does .t.t flip it that way?
It's
so
cool.
It was.
If you use not put a flip LR or flip UD.
Yeah. Yeah, they're flipped on the vertical axis.
Is it plot?
Can we plot? Ooh. Little cluster.
Colored by symbol, not symbol.
That's nice.
Yeah, and if I do this instead.
So can you measure that as like a radius? Can you measure that as a radius?
You can, yes. And so if I then do...
Or can you just plot it as a function of radius? Would that reduce it to one dimension?
Yes, if you wanted it to be one dimensional. There's the depth, which is...
I guess another one. Is the information sufficiently captured in one dimension? Or do the other...
I don't know yet. I think there's two axes here that are, I mean,
let's see if I can get past this one here.
No, they don't. What, 90?
Yes. There we go. It's a horrible color map for this, though.
Why does it flip? In the
there we go. That looks good. That's interesting. There's a pattern. Well, that's the size of the first component at all. Or the separation.
Ooh,
anyway,
that's Dr. Fellowship in low frequency radio astronomy.
Mm-hmm.
What? Let's get a little new email.
Yeah.
Up to 29 beams.
Dr. Fellowship in cosmic magnetism.
Yeah, I think we need to give a really good think to how this ought to work.
Ooh, time to fire off a little email.
I will. Like, multiprocessing means that we're going to copy
Yay.
Everything, every time, right? So, we need to not do that.
Yeah, yeah.
The obvious way to not do that is to... use Python. Have maybe a memory map, store the things, and then explicitly refer to that memory map, reopening it in each subprocess. And it's on a small... new process, so we could use threading.
Sucker sitting there taking up a substantial amount of the sky.
So what if we made a
possibly practically done as far as I'm concerned?
I don't know.
How about your
what
paper?
If we made a new file?
Hey.
Was this Cleanwood. So it took
get onto it if I was
some paths to files that it wasn't allowed to change.
Mm.
A pixel reference. I mean, we need to neaten it up first, but in principle, we could do this. A bit of a pixel reference, and then
it
wrote to a specific part of another memory map. And I think that would be safe.
Yeah.
If we were careful about it. And because of the nice OO interface, you can just swap out the
mm-hmm.
bit that does that.
Please.
In principle.
Why does it say axes must be different?
29.
Delete.
I don't know if that's like 29 beams, or if it's like 29... outputs.
Right. Look at this sucker.
Y'all.
Okay, it's 14. Halfway.
It's nothing worse than when
they can't be the same answer.
Magically fix all your problems and you actually have to do some work.
Yeah, but the answers you want to return on. What's the shape of this
thing? The 2D array.
Yeah.
Or GN tenant, possibly.
I mean, dot T will rotate. Oh no,
yeah,
it'll flip. Never mind.
It flips. And then I end up
yeah, yeah,
running
yeah,
the wrong way.
Makes sense. Oh.
My neck.
Just open it in portrait mode.
Here's the absolute value of the leakage.
Ooh.
Fancy.
All beams on top of each other.
Where are the white bits?
Just there's no points there.
Oh.
Oh wow.
Just by sheer chanceitude.
Mm-hmm.
That is a good plot.
It's an awesome plot, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
That's
a
range.
I'm gonna
go
about
10%
a sec.
The black circle is half degree radius again.
I think you don't have this trade, you think you
color
do.
Maybe that doesn't it account.
Negative values.
Yeah.
Yeah, I might stop doing the absolute value.
Clean FDF is three dimensional.
Yes.
So you want one, two,
pretty
right?
Bloody
you want
low
zero
to
one.
Me.
Clean FDF.
Oh,
yeah.
Is there?
Yeah.
The one, the one hit by.
Why is he called
by
the negative values?
There's a
oh,
one
that's actually
because
I'll fix that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I assume that's fair.
The hit account.
Galactic
plate
and racks looks a bit.
Hey! Beautiful!
Oh, you can see the filaments.
Yeah,
nice.
Yeah.
The filaments
are nice. Yeah. I guess we can see if they're magnetized.
Yeah, I know what those things are.
The polarized.
So that foreground.
We've been around for decades.
What are they?
Magnetized filaments.
Those little.
I love this camera that's noisily like.
You're like tracking
like,
those.
It's a galaxy, man. I don't care about
it. I feel like on those and like
ooh.
The languages.
Oh, nice.
It's actually pretty cool.
Oh, that's nice. Yeah.
Fancy.
Yeah, the Beatlife found those things ages ago, man.
Yeah. Well, boring.
I mean, not boring, it's just that they're not new.
It's new ones, I can see.
Are there new ones?
Right.
Yeah?
There's the detail, in, oh, the, even the, oh, certainly the Meerkat one, but in the one, even the one we did, the deeper field, there's filaments way out.
Right.
Much further out than. With the VLA in shoes.
That's odd looking.
What?
Clean. Okay, come on, come on. Come on. Do the clean thing, match up.
Yes, they
do.
Oh.
Yes,
sorry, I'm an idiot. Actually, it'll probably look better than this. I forgot that I said of automatic flagging of about. And jet skis.
Doesn't make me really want to use
it. Oh, yes.
So,
I'll do it.
Most of the good stuff in there. I was wondering why look, there's a hole in the galactic center.
Yeah.
So I thought, when did that become a donut?
Look, you've got the shadow of the black hole.
Look, there's the black hole.
Take that, Heil Falcon.
Cool, that a black hole. This is wrong.
Okay, there we go. Now I've removed my idiocy.
Have you?
Okay.
Oh, that looks much better.
Mm-hmm.
Sweet!
Oh no.
I like
that's,
it. I like it a lot.
Why are these lying to me?
The tape's sick.
Oh, because I've made numbers on themselves.
Do you want to yeet your code up onto the GitHubs?
So,
yes.
Darkish blue.
And then I can
make
a dark red too.
Say.
What's that? Say what now?
Darkish blue
we're
in the centre.
Well, now I can make a radio flop as well.
That looks a little better. Let's stick one above the other, I suppose. And
so what's going on here? Verbal is withdrawing the ball leaf paper.
Ooh, Flax, hey, you're killing me.
What are you doing?
So hard on this.
It's for nexicating.
Yes.
Oh,
several people have complained.
Like,
amazing.
I don't
know.
What?
Really?
Oh my god. What the hell is that about?
Yeah, okay. And start.
I low key hate this visualization thing.
What's that?
I low key hate visualization thing. It's like, it's quiet. It's quite something.
Oh yeah,
I'm gonna open a new tab.
Try pasting stuff into it.
Oh yeah, no, I've just been retyping everything. I don't know what I'm doing.
Muted to GitHub.
Yes, please. Oh, is that a you have?
Yes.
Ooh.
And I have a crappy repo with my mock data if you want to.
Sweet. Nah, that's okay. Oh wait, you want a branch?
There's a complaint on the content of a Wallaby overview paper.
Yeah, I don't really
understand.
Kidna work.
I gave her some comments where I was like, I think overview is like way too long, like you can cut out half of it. And she was like, okay, well, she was like, thanks for that. I just prefer to keep
data
it. If I hear some comments, I'll do so. Yeah. At the moment, you're the only person who's complained about this. Right. I was like, oh, that's true. Right.
And yet here it is.
But she makes it sound like
there's a whole bunch of stuff that makes the
deeper complaints.
Yeah.
The arrays, etc.
Terrible center on the message that the, she was.
You have these arrays which are going to hold the answers.
Yeah.
Right. So I feel like we want these to be internally clean. Yeah.
What's going on with this little shit?
You pass in the IDIC array. Do you also pass in the IDIC?
Which one are you in? Hold on.
Yeah.
An investigation.
Oh yeah. True. Yes.
I feel like these should be made by the cleaner, and the cleaner should be mapping itself. That feels the way to do it. So you can put them into the cleaner's init function.
An overview paper.
Yeah.
This is my survey. Like.
No. You just make these, right? You know, they're all zero.
I was saying the crank, but you know,
yeah, so if you just paste them.
Introduction.
Oh,
you just cut and paste it.
Much more like a review paper. Like in all the different Acorn applications and all
stuff. Eat them down there.
I thought it went beyond the scope of what. You know, a focused paper on a Wallaby would present.
Yeah,
so,
and so you don't have to dirty FTF, so you probably
like,
want
about
to...
That, so I'm not going to do it.
Pass.
I said, no, fine, whatever. That's okay.
The dirty FTF?
Who are you going to die on, is it?
Maybe.
But I didn't, there was nothing there that was, like, contentious.
Can I get these?
You can argue about, like, whether you thought
that
the
data are actually facing.
Yeah, okay.
Material presented was, you know, all required.
What?
I mean,
certainly useful to have that kind of paper out there.
It's not
like
I said,
like there should be a button there.
There should be a button there for sure. Can you send that by email, Brian?
That's fine.
I should not throw that stone.
Still recording.
Oh,
yeah, exactly.
Oh wait, which way does mp.stack stack?
Oh.
I mean, that's the quote in the order.
Anyways, this is quite a
weird. I shoved it up
to
the end, or
because, but then for some reason.
What are you trying to do?
For some reason,
oh,
it needs to return the right
going
order.
On.
Okay. For some reason, the .t makes it flip to 180 degrees the wrong way.
Okay. What's the dimensionality of your things? In your model cleaner is it? Are they 2D and you want their output to be 3D?
No, I want the output to be 2D as well.
Concatenate.
Although they may be 3D.
Just concatenate then. And then reshape later. Concatenate's what you want.
It's just
not stack. Stack is if you have multiple things that are the same size and you want them to be squished into a new axis.
Yeah.
That's my bad.
Things have not gone well. But why?
Nope, it's now output them as a 1D.
That's good, actually. That's what you want.
Oh, do we want a V stack?
V stack is deprecated. Stack with an axis argument.
Thank you.
something you need for Jan, right?
Yeah.
Now it helps to close all your brackets when you run a file. And then just a cube, but no cube index gets. What the fuck does that mean?
Minus one. There we go. So it'll work on 3D arrays then too.
I need to squish these. Is there a good way to squish them into an MFS image? Like, make my load.
Any way to do what? Sorry?
Take all the channels in the image and go whoop.
What do you mean by whoop?
Some.
Yeah, you can do moment in myriad.
Mood in casa.
Either way.
Yeah.
Or you could write a Python script.
I'm gonna write a Python script.
Yeah.
Or.
Actually, we get coffee and then I'm gonna write a Python script.
Smash. You could call it.
I'm almost there.
Alright, well, that makes a lot of shit. Wait.
Let me just make. This should be the correct shape. If I am,
that's horrible.
Yeah.
All this rubbish.
Yeah,
indeed.
Trying
to figure it out. I think we've got some bad antennas left in the array.
All right.
That was telling us the problem that was spotted yesterday. But
I think so, yeah.
Yeah.
I should show you. Fiddly-dee potatoes. What bean is this sucker? That's the worst. It's work on that sucker. 18. Just highlight this as a nightmare. Bloody awful, isn't it? Away with ye.
Service is useful or not, but I've now not done absolute value anymore.
Actually, I was just thinking the other field where it didn't see much in the way of leakage was the Fornix one, but that was also foresight. Because Craig probably didn't hear that conversation prior because I don't think you were there in the morning. I said it was a bit odd because like most of the observations I've done, I generally only see about 0.1-0.2% leakage in Stokes V, whereas both the work that Shannon and George have done, they're seeing many percent, which I just thought was odd.
Yeah.
I don't really understand why.
Yeah, so I think, first of all, it's not leakage corrected at all, so there's definitely some...
Because I didn't do anything special. It basically just calibrates against 1930.
Yeah. But I think because I looked at the residual leakages from yours, like basically got the 1934 data and then re-ran the leakage calibration and it came out at like 9 × 10⁻⁶ or something like that. So yeah, I think that like bandpass calibrator script actually solves for the leakages. I think it solves for them in a frequency-dependent manner, as far as I can tell as well, because all of the data that I've run through that I mean, maybe I'm wrong, but all of the data I've run through your pipeline, the spectral behavior of the sources just looks beautiful. It just comes out really, really nice. Admittedly, I haven't been imaging it up in megahertz channels, so maybe I'm just averaging it out or something like that. But
well, George's one is averaged out. I mean, yours is over continuum images, isn't it? It's not spectral.
Yeah, so my pass.
It's, I don't think it's that. So why not? I was kind of surprised that Askesoft doesn't do that.
Yeah, no, because it should be like an easy bolt-on. So I started talking to Matt about this, like implementing it, and
because I just assumed it was there. That's why I never really.
Yeah, no, it's not. It's not. It was always done in this separate polarization calibration pipeline that I had written up because we didn't do the XY phase correction, like.
Right.
At the beamforming stage originally, so there was like this huge XY phase that had to be corrected for before you could then like go and calculate the leakages and solve for those and apply them. So that was done offline, and then at this point, now that we solve for XY phase at the beamforming stage, like there's no reason why we can't just solve for leakages, you know, of 1934 observations. And so I've been talking to Matt about trying to implement that, and we're like, we should, and then I was away traveling and
it's your fault.
Yeah, and I admitting fault, hey. I sort of am, really. Because Matt's like, we should discuss it, and then I just it fell off the radar. But it should be done. It needs to get put in.
So that could certainly explain the differences in
everything. Yeah. And one thing, you know, I think we'd get rid of the spectral ripple as well, at least in the linears, if we did like a frequency dependent leakage solution, which I think we could do on 1934.
So with the data that I have, I do that to some respect, but I still see that in, at least in stakes V.
Yep.
So
Q, you do, yep.
And U, I think it disappears for the most part.
Right. Okay.
V is wonky.
Okay, right. Yeah.
Because that was a 3C. Sorry, it's a pulsar again. Valor.
Yeah.
When I looked at Valor.
Yeah.
Because that's just whoppingly powerful and Q and U.
Yeah.
And it just looked like textbook.
Yeah. Yeah.
Spectrum.
Yeah, that's like in my Fornax field data as well. You look at bright sources and it's just. it's just perfect sinusoid.
But V was a bit weird. So I was expecting it to be fairly linear.
Yep.
But it kind of, on average, yes.
Yeah.
It has the right. Magnitude and sign, but it had all this kind of ripple all over it.
Yes. Yeah, well, I wonder if that's just being introduced now at the beamforming stage. So, like, baking it in because of this cavity effect or something in the ODC signal. Like, people had always sort of assumed, I think, operated on the assumption that, it wouldn't affect the observations because it's low power and shouldn't correlate and all that sort of thing. But Aidan lately has been talking a bit about whether maybe there's some spillover or something from adjacent antennas or
swamp gas.
Yeah, swamp gas. Yeah, some sort of miasma in the air.
Reflecting off the swamp gas.
That's affecting things. So, it'd be interesting to see. Aaron's sort of working on it now. I think he's sort of gave me a bit of an update before. What are you saying? He said,
$99.
Looks very homogenous across the array. It has the focal length standing wave imprint.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm going to play with gating the standing wave in time domain and extracting the ODC data before the XY phase correction.
Are you like a king of it,
I don't know. He's talking about some sort of sorcery that will fix it.
Gas. Swamp gas.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
Aaron is a sorcerer extraordinaire. I wanted to talk to him about, like, this XY phase correction at the beamforming stage, and he was just in the office. He's like, that won't work because of this and this. And I'm like, hang on, what if we did this? And then I'm just thinking about it. And he like basically generated this new approach in real time for me. I was like, Jesus, man.
And he
was
like,
he's like, if we reference this to this, I was like, hang on, referencing what? it was truly impressive.
Okay, sideways again. What if I dot T it now?
All right. Images.
Why do things have to have dimensions?
Yes. Have you considered flattening your array and then reshaping it later?
Is there an ignore antennas option in WS Clean?
It's add argument.
Is there an ignore antennas option in WS Clean? It's just like don't image me with blah.
It's one or two. Add argument.
Nope.
Thank you.
No.
Offering up. Kind of silly question as
the pass of the pass hours.
I've lost.
Yeah, I know that one.
I've lost them.
I've lost all my respect for Andre, and now I'm big.
Just use the. Just flag it.
Don't want to flag it. Because I want to run like a whole bunch of different runs on.
That's a
bad thing. By different antennas.
Poor Andre.
Yeah.
Ouch.
Seriously, Craig, what's wrong with you?
Don't get me wrong. I love Andre's tools. I was just extolling their virtues last night.
Oh, you love his tools? It's just
that. Oh, yeah. WS Clean is beautiful as far as I'm concerned.
So, what's the timing like, Craig?
What's that?
I'm hoping you're... I mean, I'm assuming you're looking at the same data as ASCAP.
Sorry?
Are you using Andre's tools for ASCAP data?
Yes.
And what's the timing like? I mean, how long does it take to process?
Oh, yeah. So, I don't know compared to, like, actual... side-by-side comparisons of the imager itself.
Oh, roughly.
I guess I'm not doing a...
Roughly. Imager, just how long does it take you?
Well, like, to image up in MFS, it takes no time at all to de-involve.
What?
For the cubes, it takes...
it's good to...
Probably on the order of...
To do if it's
a day or something to run through
as well.
Set of Stokes-Aiken UV tubes generating 36 channels across the band, deconvolving, and yeah, that's got like a 5,000 by 5,000 pixel image.
To get a 5,000 by 5,000 pixel cube, it, to your satisfaction, it takes about a day.
On the order of, yeah.
For all 36 beams.
Yeah, that's parallelized across beams.
But the... MFS takes no time at all, you say?
MFS is super quick, yeah.
Ooh. What's the bandwidth you're using for MFS?
300 megahertz on the order of 200
megahertz. With all of them present, or average to lesser number of channels?
Oh, it's... it's 1 megahertz.
I have no better way to do this.
True.
So you say it takes no time at all.
I mean, doesn't take 5 hours?
No.
To get it to a level that you are satisfied with?
No. It's super quick. Like, it's... I time it versus CASA, and it's about 100 times faster than CASA.
Which algorithm are you using for this? WS Clean.
WS Clean.
And where are you running this?
PSC.
Ah, you have a big fat memory there, do you?
Yeah.
Right.
Fat enough.
Right.
Adequately fat.
Yeah.
So.
Those tools are all memory hogs.
Yeah.
Now it makes sense.
Right.
So, have you looked at how much memory is actually required for these images?
No.
Any logs that would log it?
What's your log?
I ask it because we're also trying to spec our new machine, right? So,
oh, right.
So,
yeah.
Even if not the entire machine, few nodes had this kind of memories. It would be really good.
Yeah, so look. Let's see if I've got a log.
Are you guys happy on Galaxy today? Or is Galaxy happy with you today?
Mm. Processing script.
I hate you.
The feeling's mutual.
Hip. High five.
Don't you find a copy operation on the remote server?
No, it's not that. To me.
Dot error. What? Ah, here we go. Just make it nice up.
No! And he finished this.
We should just be returned in the same order. Why did they come out from here?
Maybe he thinks you're coming out from here.
Yeah,
there's
yeah.
a scene from Mark.
Pop it up, maybe.
Those will be diced carrots.
Getting weird in here.
Everyone's got a bit squishy.
Do not.
It's still recording.
Yeah. For the record, we're all
weird is
losing
good.
It.
Weird is good.
And how?
I'm not sure I ever had it.
Why won't the dots line up with the dots?
Why?
Forgive me.
All right.
Okay.
Yeah, I can give you log files and stuff like that. All right, the second bit are.
They're
all there.
Thank you.
Yep. No worries. What am I doing?
Oh, this is an old data. I see.
What?
Seriously. Okay, well, that's lame to the point of ridiculous.
Lame.
What the hell?
Seriously, same question.
Yeah.
You guys working on the same problem?
Unlikely.
The problem is the same, though.
Are you also having angst about the fact that I don't really care about converting a list into an umpire?
Something like that. I mean, I don't understand.
I was having all of those problems yesterday.
Right.
And then I was like, why is the array full of strings? And I was like, because I accidentally decided to include something that was a string first array.
So great.
As type goat. Yeah.
Python code you gave me to cure the cubes was probably designed to cure the cubes that you had already rotated.
Quite possibly. Yeah,
so it doesn't work for the
pipeline
ones.
Ah, right. Okay. Yeah. Yeah, I think I'd, by that stage, eliminated the Stokes axis or done something else.
For so on the ones that I have, it finds the Stokes axis to be 288 channels long.
Ah, right.
We have discovered more than four.
I'm
stacking
more orthogonal parameters.
I'm giving the correct
on the pointer sphere,
I'm all about, in theory and discovering polarization rotations in four dimensions.
Sounds very Trumpian.
What do you mean flipped?
Hey, how's it going?
Come on, Emil.
Sure.
So that's V over I, function of radius, field radius. So it's pretty big numbers.
Yeah, that's
that's a new clue.
Something's wrong.
And V over I.
The leakage in the stress off.
Give me a look.
No, it's your part.
The flip is also B leading to it.
C. Should be in the same spot.
I didn't see the numbers. 10%?
Yeah. I'm flicking between the two images.
That's
not
I think
it's just column minus one.
10 seconds.
Because
I
can only get it on the axis of
error. I mean, by hand.
Or on B.
Yeah, it's never been more than 0.5.
It's flipped along
the pixel line.
And 0.1 is the best, but 0.5 is the best.
I need it to work.
How many kills is that?
That's crazy.
The thing that's worse, I have
no
idea how to get
how
this
many
back
fields
out.
Is it?
That's just
how many racks fields is that?
1400 or something.
Copper
beams.
Yeah.
Can you
come up and tell me there's that many like bright B sources, but yeah.
1400 beams.
And those,
it's less than one per
direction mismatches being accounted for and things like that.
Wait, this is
No, no, I mean.
Actually killed it.
While imaging, we need to
see. But it needs to be on the
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
That's
the source sort of again. Uniformly from amongst the beams, or is there any beams that sort of, or fields that keep cropping up?
Well,
I was just saying, is there any beams that keep, or fields that keep cropping up and contribute more to the.
Well,
I just wonder if there's a dodgy cal on any of them.
Oh, yes. Yeah, possibly.
Fair enough. Here's the result. But interpretation can wait.
Please not think about it too hard.
Basically, it is.
Oh, that was that.
What is this nonsense?
I picked up control Z, but not control C.
See.
Counting
there we go.
Oh, yeah.
And I just want to echo what I'm doing as well.
Potato.
There we go. Now I'll tell you what it's doing.
Okay.
Well, I think Min should be joining us soon, in a couple minutes, I guess.
I should get that one, just squish it.
Okay, so we need to return the correct order. Well, this is a 3D array, or 2D array.
Can you just do it as a 2D array and reshape it? If it's coming out in the same order, it's going to reshape.
There's different levels. For example, if I did an SQ on my jobs, I would like to see all of them. Well, first, my VNC doesn't work on one problem at a time. I'll show you my first problem. Remote Viz also doesn't work. So this one, but the terminal is there, but I can't put my mouse anywhere else.
I'm in.
Yeah, it squishes it. Oh, what?
To a 3D or
If it has switched, it's
automatic. That's weird.
Oh.
Why?
But even then, I should be able to go
that
to
the
other terminal, right?
Well, we got
I don't know if
you should. Surely you should go to one no matter what.
If it's a Mac thing, I don't know if it's.
All right, guys, when do we get started? Hi, Min. Thanks for joining us.
Mouse doesn't.
Hi. Hi.
Good, how are you? Okay, well, I think the plan was to have a bit of an overview of CASDA, and I think the use cases for Possum as well. Min, was that right? Great.
Yes, yeah. So what I'll do is I'll give a quick overview. I think most people are familiar with CASDA, but it'll just be a quick overview. And I'll give an update on some of the data sets that are in there and then go through the Possum use cases that I got from your team.
Perfect. And Jennifer and...
Yeah, Jennifer and Cameron are online, and I was going to say there should be plenty of time for discussion and questions.
Excellent. Great. Over to you, Min. Thank you.
All right. Sure. Let's see if I can share my screen.
Oh, yeah. That'll be a good start.
Okay. So this is Zoom. So is it under Start Share?
I don't know, actually.
What is it?
I'll try it.
Do you have a
Okay. Okay. Can you see that?
Yeah.
Okay. Let's see
what I. What's that mean?
Yeah.
Sorry. Great.
Okay. So you're seeing the presentation, yeah?
Yep.
Great. Okay. So, just to introduce you guys to CASDA, it's started development, I think it was 2013, so many years ago. And it's a collaboration between CAS, IMNT, which is the CSIRO Information Management and Technology, and the PAWSI Supercomputing Center. James Dempsey over at IMNT is our lead developer. So just wanted to quickly go over the data flow. Most of you know this, but you know, we have the data correlated on site, and then it's transported to the Pawsey Supercomputing Center, which processes the data using ASCAP Soft. So we process the data at Pawsey using ASCAP Soft, and we expect about 5 petabytes per year in full operations of science data products that will go into CASDA. And just so that we all get our terminology correct as well, I just wanted to show you the different data levels for ASCAP. So the data from the correlator goes through an ingest pipeline, and that turns it from level 3 to 4. And then when it's processed by ASCAP Soft, we call that level 5, and that will be ingested into CASDA. So when it's ingested into CASDA, it's level 5. And at that point, it's not released. So it's in CASDA, and a certain number of people who are on the project team list in CASDA, are able to access the unreleased data. And there are certain people who are also called validators, so they can validate the data. And then we can re-release the data to level 6. So the people who do the release are observatory staff, so the observatory side. So there's certain people, I think it's myself and Matt at the moment, and can release the data to level 6. And there was also what we call level 7, which some of you will be familiar with. So level 7 is the value-added data products. It's user-generated products that are uploaded into CASDA, and that they're generally based on some level 6 data products. So don't want to go into any too much detail about the deployment, but just so that you're aware, there's it's shared between Canberra and Pawsey. So over in Canberra, because we use the data access portal that IMNT have developed, that is based over in Canberra. So over in Canberra, things like the user interface and the authentication services. But over in Pawsey, we have all the services that need to be close to the data, and the data sits at Pawsey. So the data sits at TAPE on Pawsey, and it's where we stage the data for download, and do have the VO services over at Pawsey as well. And we have several different environments. We have the production environment, the environment that everybody gets to access, the live environment, but we also have some development and test environments that the team uses for developing CASDA. So in terms of its functionality, the idea is that it's the long-term storage for ASCAP science data products. So we have search and data access via the web, and also VO services, so you can do scripted access. CASDA allows for validation of ASCAP observations and the upload of value-added science catalogs and image cubes by the users. And also importantly, we generate a digital object identifier, so DOIs for all data sets. And so this helps, you know, tracking of data sets for publications, et cetera. And we also do all the, you know, the archive administration, so giving team members access to unreleased data. So the type of data products that we have include calibrated visibilities, but these are at the moment for continuum resolution only, so it's frequency average. We are unable to store the full spectral resolution visibilities. And we support images and image cubes, of course, and spectral moment maps from the Wallaby team. So these basic image products generated by the ASCAP Soft pipeline. And of course, we have catalogs, so detector sources and their parameters, and the metadata, so project and observation information, and data quality information, so the output from the QA assessment. So currently there's Jordan Collier's QA assessment, which was developed for continuum data. So on the virtual observatory side, we support many different protocols. So for instance, table access protocol, simple cone search, the simple image access protocol, and spectral line access protocol, and server operations data access, or SODA. So all of this allows the user to have scripted access to the data in CASDA. So some of the data that's in CASDA right now listed here. So it's growing every month. So pretty soon I won't be able to fit it on one slide. So of course we have the first aspect of the science continuum reductions, so continuum images of NGC 7232. And we also have some high pass and SGPS spectral line cubes. So they're available in CASDA and the beta data sets as well. And we have some level 7 spectral line cubes from the Wallaby team and all the early science cosmology fields from EMU. And just recently, the last two of the very recent ingests, we have ESCAP36 dish continuum imaging of gamma G23 available on CASDA. So that's unreleased at the moment, and I expect it to be released soon because the idea was we were waiting for the EMU team to have a quick look at the data and just do some quality assessment. But I think it will be released soon. The Wallaby Early Science, the NGC 7232 H1 spectrum line cubes, a few of them have been released. I think that there may be 8 SBIDs in total, or maybe a few more than that. But 2 have been released onto CASDA. So that's 48 megahertz of bandwidth at full spectral resolution. So in terms of the future development, we're in the middle of the first part of stage 3 at the moment. So that is 3 sprints in May and June, and we expect a release. So the next version of CASDA from that development to go live at the end of June. And then we should have another 3 months of development in financial year 2019-2020. And then similarly, another 3 months the year after that. But that's all dependent on funding. Our highest priority items are enhanced VO, so updating the VO protocols to make sure that we're up to date. So some DAP UI improvements. So one thing we just worked on the last couple of weeks in the last sprint was, for instance, the cutout service, making that interactive cutout service a lot better because you could zoom in but not pan. So now you can zoom in and then pan around. We're looking at developing more script examples and developing our own AstroQuery or PyVR module. So I'd like to get feedback from the users whether they're leaning towards one of AstroQuery or PyVR or whether it doesn't matter. I think that over the last couple of years there's been more emphasis on level 7 data products. So I'd like to get an understanding of what that means as well for CASDA, because we have that capability, but it may be that there's more things that the user would like in terms of the level 7 data products. And part of our work is that we also have to look at the consolidation of the AT online archive. So that's the archive that serves compact array and some Parks data as well, so raw data. And so we have to look at what to do with that data. And one option is to put it into CASDA. So now I just want to go over the use cases that I got from your team. So the first one is, as Serata developers, we want to be able to automatically download the polarization data cube products to CIDC for level 7 processing. And so we've already made a start on this because at the ADAS meeting in DC in November last year, James and I had a face-to-face meeting with Stefan Godet from CIDC. And we did an example tap query against OBSCore to find the continuum cubes, and you can get a list of the images and then get the data links. So I think it's quite easy to get a script going that will do a pull from the CASDA system. So the idea, I think what we need to do here is just keep in touch with the CIDC and work with them to get this pull system going. And the second use case is we want to have simple and fast access to validation products associated with level 5 or 6 data products. So currently the evaluation files are all tarred up into one tar file. So that tar file includes all the SCAP sub-imaging logs. So I don't know why it's so large, but apparently it's really large. So what we're doing is we are going to separate the SCAP sub logs and metadata from the continuum QA pipeline output from Jordan, and then make those two separate. And we'll also look at how to make the QA pipeline HTML output available as a web page. There are complications there because it's like where or who hosts the web server. So one suggestion is that CAS could set up a web server and put all of those HTML outputs somewhere. So we'll look into that. And the third one is that we want to be able to automatically upload level 7 data product back into CASDA and have them properly associated with the corresponding level 6 data products that they came from. So so currently the level 7 uploads are via web UI, and if you only have one upload to do, that's not very labor intensive, but I'm guessing that you'll have many level 7 uploads to do. So yes, some automated way to do this is it's probably very useful. The only comment I'd make is that with the automated fashion, we'd have to make sure that, you know, each time it's done, that the correct metadata, et cetera, is provided. Like when it's a user interface, when it's a form, it's more likely that you'll take a lot of effort putting the correct information into the form. So that would be the only risk, I'd say, with the automated process, but it's definitely worth looking into it. So I'm getting our business analyst to look at that and see what how much work that would take. We could look into putting that into an upcoming development. And when you upload level 7 data, it does ask you for provenance. So you list the associated SPIDs. So I can show an example of that right now, if you like. So yeah, because this was my last slide.
Great, thanks, man. Yeah, I think if you could show us that would be nice.
Yep, we'll do that. So let me, you still seeing my screen?
Yep.
Okay, I'll try to make this big. I'm not sure if you can see the text. Okay, so can you see that?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so this is an example upload, level 7 upload from Tristan Reynolds from the Wallaby team. And so you're asked what SPIDs are associated with your upload. So he put these here. So yeah, that's quite a lot of SPIDs there that he put together. So that's currently how the level 7 data products are linked back to the level 6 or 5 data product.
Okay, great. Thanks for that overview, Min. That was great. I guess just like to sort of see if Jennifer and Cameron have any questions or comments at this point, really. I mean, here too, but I think most of the questions are likely to come from Toronto.
I have a number of comments and questions. The first one is for the Possum use case 2 in terms of the validation scripts. And I don't know if it's clear, because from what you said, it sounded like you're talking about Jordan scripts, but we are also developing our own set of scripts.
Yep.
So there's a different web page. But in addition to that, there's also a number of pipeline outputs. And I think Aiden sort of alluded to this the other day, in that there's some basic Stokes-I validation that's not done in Jordan scripts. And so that needs to be included as well, and whether it gets tied into our scripts or into the EMU scripts, or if it's a totally separate script. So there's a number of different validation data products that I think are being circulated or you know, are in people's minds. So for example, I think one of the most basic data products, and it sounds like CASDA already has this to a degree, is just a preview of the image, like a thumbnail.
Yep.
Or not a thumbnail, but I guess it is a thumbnail, but it's a large thumbnail. A PNG output, and the pipeline generates that. But I guess it's not clear to me what this validation interface will look like, and you know, if we're developing scripts, how to tie that in. And I don't know, maybe you're not necessarily the best person to answer this question, but I think it's a broader question that, or discussion that needs to be had in terms of how all of these validation scripts fit together and what the interaction with them is going to be.
Yeah, I think that's, yeah, unfortunately, we don't have, for instance, Jordan hasn't stayed on, and we have had discussions about how to do the quality assessment, and unfortunately, we just don't have the resources to have, right at the moment, we don't have someone who's dedicated to synthesizing all of this, the quality assessment and the validation together. And what I will do is pass this on to, I think, you know, Aiden is aware, but also pass it on.
I can add something to on this.
Yeah, yeah.
So this has come up time and again, and this is the following cause. So the SDP would like to provide an infrastructure that would allow science teams, the various validation scripts that science teams use to look at data quality into our pipeline. So we are working on actually formulating a mechanism to allow science users to pass on their scripts. We are trying to, so we have something like a Git repository, but as of now it's internal to CSIRO. So we're working to make this available for science users of ASCAP to upload their scripts there as a Git repository. And we will maintain that once we validate it's working and things like that. So this is still being discussed, but the idea is we will request science teams to decide on what kind of validation they would require and supply tools that would do that validation for us. And we will run it as a regular pipeline processes and get information out. So does that sound reasonable, Cameron, Jennifer?
My comment there, sorry, would be that once the products from the QA are more known, then CASDA is in a position to work out how to share them.
Yes.
Because at the moment, we don't know what's
exactly
going to be generated.
Also, it'll be great. I mean, it's only reasonable that experts in the science teams would know better whether to accept the data or not. So with the familiarity with current ASCAP data, we hope that the science teams will provide us those tools, and we will integrate those to the pipeline. So this is something we're taking up in the next sprint as well, starting this. I have already started this in a very small scale with other ACES team members. So tiny scripts, small scripts that can be run by the pipeline. So we just need to formalize it in a more robust way.
Yeah, and I mean, it's what you're saying is not a surprise to me. It's just the whole path from our validation scripts through the pipeline and into CASDA is, I guess, yeah, I'm, it's just a point to keep reiterating, because we need to find a solution. And I guess it would be helpful if these validation scripts, as you said, kind of fit together somehow, and that you can click between them, because there's probably useful information that we're going to generate that will be useful to the team, for example. So
so my suggestion was to take a pilot exercise with, say, a Poisson validation script a basic Poisson validation script on this was something I had proposed to Matt as well. Unfortunately, he's not here now. He's not well. So let's take a pilot. This is my proposition. Let's take a pilot validation script and see what it takes for us to make use of this and get the results reflected into CASDA. So we'll require close coordination with CASDA as well in terms of, you know, integrating them together.
I guess the one other point, Min, you mentioned that there's this tool that you can look at the image, you can zoom in and pan around and select your cutout region.
Yeah.
So that is providing some kind of preview of the image, and that almost seems useful for validation as well.
So
you the image.
Yeah, I can quickly show you what that is. So it's a Latin light service, and currently it doesn't, it uses, you choose whatever background you'd like, and currently I think the default is sums. So,
oh, I see. So you're not actually previewing the ASCAP images?
No, because we'd have to generate a HIPS image for every single ASCAP image, yeah. But there are plans too, for instance, with the IMU data to generate a HIPS image from incoming IMU data and then have like a live HIPS image that gets updated every time there's data ingested. So let me just log in.
And is the idea to use that in the validation step, or is that just for...
Not in the validation step, no. We're thinking about ways to make that, to show, for instance, show that in the show. So it was more for showing the status of the sky coverage of a survey, such as
right.
in your Wallaby. Yeah. Let me just go.
Min, can I ask you a question on this?
Yep.
The first stages, the early stages of these processes, my understanding is we'll still have to rely on manual looking into these validation outputs. Or is your thought, or are you thinking that it will be automated right from day one?
Sorry, we're automating validation outputs.
There would be outputs from validation scripts, but the decision to whether to upload it to CASDA or not based on these scripts, will that be an automated one? Eventually, I guess it would, but in the beginning, my understanding is it would require a human to look at it.
Sorry, what's your question is whether the decision to upload into CASDA is manual or automatic?
Yeah, that's right. In the beginning days, at least.
Well, yeah. So right now, everything is manual.
Okay.
In full operations, I'm not sure. It should be automated, but you know, we'll see how the workflow works during the pilot surveys. The whole point of doing the pilot surveys is for us to
exactly
to
yeah.
understand the workflow and how operations will go.
Yes.
Yeah.
So I'm just trying to let Poisson participants know that this will be an active development for some time.
It's definitely active. It's manual in that it's done by the SDP team. That doesn't mean
right.
that the data won't be uploaded without input from the science teams.
Right.
The data could be uploaded without any input from the science teams, but might not be released. For instance, Gamma G23 data was processed by the SDP team or the operations team.
Operations.
And then just uploaded, and there was, yeah.
And there's
just wanted to show you that yeah. cutout service that I was mentioning. So this one. Okay, so go ahead, Jennifer, while I bring it up.
Yeah, so I was just going to say there's the related question, which has been asked before, but as how one deals with whether EMU decides to release the data, but Possum doesn't, and is it separated out in terms of the data products? Like, could the Stokes I cube be released, but not Stokes Q and U cubes, for example?
So currently it's the whole ingest is, so the collection that's put in is what's validated. And so if at the time of ingest, that's part of the package, that is what is validated or not.
So if the package includes, so I guess this is a question for Wasim maybe, or when the ASCAP pipeline runs for Possum, there's going to be the MFS products generated, but those are probably the same as EMU's use products, right? And yeah. And for example, the CeleVe source finding output, both foods are going to use that. So is there's no function to not release parts of that package, I guess?
My understanding is not yet. So every product coming out of one day's processing or one day's processing, the CASDA upload scripts assumes that each product must be present before it's being uploaded. So there's no switch as of now that would let you to upload I but not Q, U, and V as
right.
of now. You have to do it, and of course, since these are scripts, you can always tune them for a given case, like we have done for the Gamma 23, for example, or was it Gamma 23? Gamma 23 has all polarization? No, it doesn't. It does? It doesn't.
I'm not sure about upload package.
Right. But I think it would depend on what one would find useful. I mean, are you suggesting that we should, if I is good, just upload I and not care about Q, U, V?
Well, no. I mean, it was more if there's a problem with the polarization products. Like, I don't know how closely coupled EMU and Possum are in. So, for example, the EMU pilot survey, is the plan to only process it through the pipeline? Is the plan to process that data twice through an EMU pipeline and then a Possum pipeline? I don't think that's the case, right? It's going to go through one pipeline that will do products for both EMU and Possum.
This is still a question in my mind as well, because I think George might be able to correct me or fill me in. My understanding was that each of these projects are now, the commensality is lost, so each project will have its own, will be regarded as their project. I mean, there is no one preventing Possum from using an EMU product, but my understanding was when we run the pipeline, we'll run it with project names. I mean, this is a SBID for EMU, it's an SBID for Possum. This has been my understanding. It's not clear in my head, so please do not take this as the final say.
Sure. I don't expect anything to be the final say. It's just having, you know, just discussing these points, because I think we need to figure out some of this stuff, right?
My understanding was EMU would perhaps tell us that, hey, the processing will go much faster if you do not do any spectral processing or if you do not do any continuum cube processing. Just an example. So in that case, I do not know if we have the choice of, you know, producing all the data products that one would like to.
But then you have to run it twice, and that seems inefficient as well.
You still have commensality in mind, yes. In that case, yes.
I mean, I guess there's just some minor points in that we're relying on the output from the source finder to be the same between Emu and Possum so that we have the same source list.
So can we assume that Emu and Possum will be commensal?
Sorry?
At least with an internal understanding between Emu and Possum.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Then this is not an issue. Then all Possum observations will produce all products that Possum requires.
Just quickly, this is an example of the cutout service and the default background, so I'm just zooming in here, is sums. So you can choose out of these. So eventually, we do want to put an emu hips image up there. And this is, of course, the current CASDA, so it doesn't have the pan capability. So one improvement we're doing is that when you zoom in, that you're able to pan around as well, because currently you can't do that. And one point I thought I'd make as well while there's this, before we finish off, is that it may be useful for the Possum team to do a test upload of the level 7 data products. And so when you're ready to do that, we can do a test upload to a test environment, which doesn't affect anything, so that we can test that it works and that whoever's doing the upload is familiar with the process.
So that's something I'm working on too. I've taken a subset of the SM1006 field and producing all products that Cirada would require or that Possum would require so that Cirada is able to pull it out from CASDA. So that's something that I'm doing right now. It's just that Galaxy has been not behaving the way one expects and is being slow. I'm having to process and reprocess. So it's gone to the stage of producing cubes now. I'm just waiting for the CASDA upload scripts to finish. A fingers crossed. I've been saying this from the last several months, actually, and one thing or the other has been popping up.
Oh, so Wasim, that you're saying you actually upload them into CASDA?
I will make it ready for CASDA upload, and then Matt will have to run the CASDA upload script pointing to my directory.
Okay.
There will be 5 beams on the SM1006 field for the test.
So, sorry?
You're breaking your voice.
I don't know how to fix it.
That's better now.
That's fine.
Okay. I was going to say, related to the point about the upload of the level 70, I think that what we would like is to push the products back from CADC to CASDA, because all our data processing is going to occur within the CADC environment. And so I think, at least from my perspective, that's how we would want to set it up, but I don't know if that poses an issue from your end.
This probably would be means.
Yeah, so in terms of uploads, so currently the way to upload a level 7 data product is, if it's small enough to sit on your laptop, you can do it locally through the UI. Otherwise, if it's a big image or cube, it needs to sit over at Pawsey. So a way to do it could be, we'd have to work with CADC to send it back over to Pawsey and then upload it. But to start off with, I think we need to just test that it works. So we could do it into a test environment. And then I guess we have to think about how to do it in future when we're doing it live, because currently the CASDA uploads, the file has to sit at Pawsey. Yeah.
Okay. Any more discussion points or questions?
Just a basic question. Will downloading from CASDA be faster than downloading from Pawsy because Pawsy downloads are unusably slow.
So when you download from Kazda, there's two ways. You can stage it at Pawsy or you can do it via the web. So I can't answer that right now, so hopefully that's fast enough.
I was going to just add one last thing, which is a more general point about the level 7 data products. And I guess, I mean, it was presented as a use case for us to upload them back into Kazda, but and one of the main motivations for that is a backup for us. But it also depends on what CSIRO wants or what they need from us, because I don't know that there is a necessity to put all of the level 7 data products, although there might be that desire. So I just wanted to make that point that I guess it's just a question of whether CSIRO, or I don't know who the decision-making person is, but if they want absolutely everything or if they only want some, like the Faraday cubes, I guess they probably want the catalog, but I'm not 100% sure on that.
I'll just say that strategically, I think it's for CSI would want the data in Kazda. Yeah, because it's a way of making that ASCAP useful for the world. So we'd want it in there. I think it's because it's a user-generated product, we'd have to work with the SSTs to get that done. And it may be that a Possum team member from Australia may have to be in charge of copying that data over and then uploading it into Kazda. We'll have to have a discussion about that.
I just think I agree with Min. Generally.
Okay. There's nothing else on this topic. Then many thanks to you, Min, for joining us and for giving that overview and answering all the questions. It was really useful, I think.
No worries. I hope it was. Yeah.
And thanks everyone in Toronto for staying up past your bedtime as well. Okay. So I think, again, thanks. And I think here we're going to go get some lunch. So everybody else is free to either go to bed or have some morning tea for you.
Okay. Thanks, everyone.
Min, can you email me your slides, Min, and I'll put them on the wiki with all the other presentations.
Yeah, I'm happy to do that, Brian.
Thank you.
Great. Thanks, all.
Okay, bye.
Yes, it's a Tele1 image. It looks a little bit ruddy around the brace.
It seems to work. It's
yes.
Not a nice work. And that's speaking.
Well, Tele1 is under the clean components. It's a spectral index of the clean component.
I want to see if you do.
Nothing.
Yeah, it's
like
that. Yeah, it's not actually.
I don't know why.
A question here. I seem to only have an end meeting button and not a leave meeting button. Am I the host? I'm host somehow. I don't even know how to be the host.
Uh-oh.
Are you the host today?
Yes.
Just unplug your internet, it'll pick it up.
I'll tell you what, if you... I was going to say, if you end it, I'll just restart it. That should be fine. But,
I mean, there's no one else online, but I just wanted to let you know that that's the only option I've got.
I'm glad you told me that, because I would have been like, what the hell happened here?
All right. Have a good day.
Right. Thanks, Jennifer.
Bye.
Bye. Good night.
I don't know why I ran on.